IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. Three American soldiers were killed in the area north of Baghdad on Monday, bringing to 97 the number who have died in combat since President Bush declared an end to major hostilities in May. On Sunday night, a soldier was killed when his vehicle hit a landmine about 120 miles north of Baghdad. On Monday, another was killed when an attacker fired a rocket-propelled grenade at an American military patrol in Tikrit. And about noon on Monday, a third soldier was killed and two were wounded when their convoy hit a roadside bomb. The two latest suicide bombings in Baghdad and nearly every other attack on American soldiers in Iraq were carried out with explosives taken from Saddam Hussein's former weapons dumps, which are much larger than previously estimated and remain unguarded by American troops. The problem of unguarded weapon sites is considerably greater than has previously been stated. The U.S. military now says that Iraq's army had nearly a million tons of weapons and ammunition, considerably higher than the 650,000 tons that senior American commander General John Abizide estimated only 2 weeks ago. Boston's Logan Airport will become the first in the country to participate in a test program to electronically screen cargo before it is loaded on commercial flights. In the 30-day program to begin Tuesday, a screening machine will scan truckloads of cargo at the airport for explosives. The Transportation Safety Administration has focused on passenger and baggage screening, but only a small percentage of cargo is checked before being shipped in cargo or passenger planes. According to a GAO survey, about 22% of air cargo transported in the United States is carried aboard passenger planes. Four-term Ohio Congressman Dennis Kucinich officially announced his candidacy for president on Monday, promising to run on a populist platform of nonviolence, universal health care, and workers' rights. Speaking in the Cleveland City Council chambers, Mr. Kucinich promised to revoke U.S. participation in NAFTA and the World Trade Organization, repeal the USA Patriot Act, and create a cabinet-level Department of Peace. More IE America Network news after this.
Sting for VH1 Save the Music.
When children learn music, they learn to think in a different way. Studies have shown that it helps them to do better work in other subjects. So make sure your kids learn music. They'll learn much more than how to carry a tune.
School music programs are in trouble. Help VH1 Save the Music in our public schools. Please call toll-free 1-888-VH1-4MUSIC.
VH1 Save the Music, because music education equals brain power.
A German woman was found living with 152 sickly animals, including 51 rabbits and 45 cats, in a small high-rise apartment. Animal activists also found caged birds, a sewer rat, and a hedgehog. For IE America Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
I got a job interview this week.
The embarrassment of a cold sore scab is as painful as the sore itself. Do something about it. Try new Camphophonique cold sore treatment for scab relief. It's the only one that targets the scab with a special formula that provides maximum strength pain relief. Plus, it seals in moisture to help prevent cracking, to promote healing. Camphophonique stops pain, promotes healing, ends embarrassment.
Even in the rarefied world of outsized CEO greed, Richard Scrushy stands out. Until he was charged with cooking the company books in a massive fraud to deceive both investors and taxpayers in order to enrich himself, Scrushy was the high-flying honcho of Health South, the nation's largest chain of rehab hospitals. King Richard lived large. Four mansions, several airplanes, more than 40 cars, including a $239,000 Lamborghini, a 92-foot yacht, and ever so much more. With his ill-gotten gain, he even became a, quote, philanthropist. Then came his comeuppance. Not only does he stand charged, but 14 of his top executives have already pled guilty to fraud, the company stock took a nosedive, and Richard himself got the boot as CEO. Some might take this as a lesson in humility, but Richard doesn't know humility from humidity. He continues to wallow in the high life afforded by the millions he took from us taxpayers and HealthSouth investors. Only recently, he paid $3 million to buy a yachting marina. He bought a new jet airplane, and he also sponsored a powerboat race, joining the racers himself as skipper of his $450,000 skater boat dubbed Monopoly. Scrushy, of course, accepts no personal responsibility for his legal problems, claiming that his underlings conducted all of the thievery themselves without mentioning any of it to him. One of his top subordinates, however, testified under oath that virtually every month Richard personally directed him to inflate the numbers so the fraud could continue. Now, this bloated ego is even telling congressional investigators that he won't be available to appear before them, saying that they should watch his TV interviews if they want answers to their questions. This is Jim Hightower saying, Scrushy is the poster boy of arrogant CEOs who think they're the top dogs, and the rest of us are just a bunch of fire hydrants.
Brendan was spending the afternoon helping me pick out furniture for the new place.
The ladies are doing a little furniture shopping, are they?
That's scary. I hope you didn't make any choices without a professional.
Beanbag chairs for everybody.
God help us. Bearskin rug.
I put the car in swinger, baby.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Greetings, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in the American way from coast to coast. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting from shore to shore, from the Atlantic to the Pacific, on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting live all over the world on the Internet, on several different Internet radio stations, radiopower.org being one of the best, live365.com, this network station, www.ieamericaradio.com, and also broadcasting from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, defending you from the conservative weapons of mass destruction. Is the White House abusing its power to use government agencies for partisan political purposes? Our question for this hour, there's so much extraordinary policy stuff. I guess, sort of by default, we haven't defined Tuesdays as policy wonk day, but how policy is being made in this administration, and how it's not being made, how things are just falling apart. What the consequences are to you and me, to American democracy, the future security and stability of this country and the world. These are just really key issues, and this is the stuff we're going to dig into in our first 2 hours today. In our third hour, we're going to have on Bev Harris, who is going to be updating us on the voting machine security situation. The Democratic National Committee has just come out with, the DNC has just come out with a resolution condemning touchscreen machines, and there's apparently an article, I got an email, I haven't had a chance yet to track it back to the original site, but apparently an article in today's Independent, the newspaper in London that's so widely read here in the United States, and my guess is it's probably up on Common Dreams. I think the person who forwarded it to me got it from there. I haven't, as I said, had a chance to get to that. Saying what I've been saying for a year and a half now, which is that I think the Georgia election, either by computer error or by being hacked, got turned upside down. I think all the people who won lost, and all the people who lost won. I think all the votes got reversed. It's the only possible explanation that I can come up with. And they've actually really done the research on this. So we'll find out about that in our third hour. We'll get into that stuff. So is the White House abusing its power to use government agencies for partisan political purposes. Oh, by the way, our quote for the day from Franklin Delano Roosevelt. He said, "The liberty of a democracy is not safe if the people tolerate the growth of a private power to a point where it becomes stronger than their democratic state itself. That, in essence, is fascism. Ownership of government by an individual, by a group, or by any controlling private power." FDR. And a great quote it is. So here we've got this DOD, this Department of Defense letter-writing campaign. You see this in the news? It was interesting last night. The only newscast I saw was the CBS Evening News because of the time that it happened to be on. And Dan Rather, of course, is the most conservative of the three national newscasters. I'd say the only one of the three who actually puts a conservative spin on probably half to two-thirds of his stories, as opposed to playing them scrupulously Columbia Journalism School neutral, like you see with Tom Brokaw and Peter Jennings. But Rather really spun this thing last night. The Gannett organization, which of course publishes newspapers all over the United States, discovered just in their newspapers, for example, here in Vermont, they publish the Burlington Free Press. In my original hometown of Lansing, Michigan, they publish the Lansing State Journal. In fact, my brother works as a printer there and puts out that newspaper. And Gannett has newspapers all over the country, and just in their newspapers, they discovered the exact same letter to the editor in 11 different local newspapers signed by 11 different people. And they thought, well, this is interesting. The same form letter praising the occupation of Iraq, and so Dan Rather last night in spinning this thing, gets on a couple of the mothers, two of the mothers of the kids who supposedly signed the letters. And both of them say, one of them says, "There's no way my son wrote this letter. He doesn't write that way." Essentially saying that her son is not, you know, particularly competent at writing, which is nothing to be ashamed of. Some people are good at writing and others are not. And, you know, some people are good at math and others are not. But she basically said, "No way my son wrote this letter. I know how he writes." And the other mother said that, she'd talked to her son, and he said that somebody in their company had asked him to sign it, or if he would be willing to sign it, and that he hadn't written it. And then the way that they spin the story is, but the sentiment of the letter truly reflects the opinion that these soldiers held. And, you know, I have every reason to believe it does. But just because those soldiers in that part of Iraq have that particular sentiment, and of course the letter doesn't get into at all things like, "I'm afraid I might die," right? Instead, let me just read to you from the quality of life and security for the citizens has been largely restored. And we are a large part of why that has happened. The majority of the city has welcomed our presence with open arms, says this letter. It goes on. I have been serving in Iraq. It starts out, "I have been serving in Iraq for more than 5 months, now as a soldier in the 2nd Battalion of the 503rd Airborne Infantry Regiment, otherwise known as the ROC. We entered the country at midnight on the 26th of March. 1,000 of my soldiers, my fellow soldiers and I parachuted from 10 jumbo jets known as C-17s onto a cold, muddy field in Bashur, northern Iraq." And notice the adjectives. Notice, I mean, whoever wrote this is actually very good because they're able to paint pictures with words. This is the key to good writing, whether you're writing fiction or nonfiction. If you can evoke a visual image in a person's mind, or you can evoke a feeling, a kinesthetic sensation in them with words, that's brilliant writing. It continues, the letter, "Things have changed tremendously for our battalion since those first cold, wet weeks spent in the mountain city of Bashur. On April 10, our battalion conducted an attack south into the oil-rich town of Kirkuk, the city that has since become our home away from home. Doesn't that sound comfortable? And the focus of our security and development efforts. Marvelous words. Newt Gingrich would approve. Kirkuk is a hot and dusty city of just over 1 million people. The majority of the city has welcomed our presence with open arms. And, on it goes. So it turns out none of these guys actually signed this letter. None of them. And nobody has stepped forward and said, well, yeah, I wrote that letter. See, what's significant about this is that there is a 227-year history. Actually, it goes back before that, if you consider that the American Army was actually formed before the American government was formed, in as much as it overthrew the British. Say a 240-year history of the military not being partisan. This is an essential aspect of the military. We have this kind of two-tiered separation here in the United States. You have the military, but the founders very clearly and explicitly put the military under control of civilians within the government. And there was a reason for that, because they had seen other countries go down in flames in military coup. So the military is insulated by being under the authority of a civilian, and that civilian is under the authority of a politician who is elected by we the people. And the tradition has always been that the military is not used to advance the purposes of a politician. The military is not used or exploited to advance the PR needs of a political party. And here we have this, I mean, this is a critical ethical issue. Any officer in the military, most of the grunts don't realize this. I mean, most of the combat guys out there, they're not sophisticated enough with regard to this aspect of how the military relates to the civilian government. But it is something that is beaten into the brain of every single officer. I can tell you, when this story came out, there's not an officer in the United States military who didn't cringe. The guys in the field, you know, it's not their thing to worry about. But they're the ones who are being used. They're the ones whose names are showing up on these letters that are popping up in newspapers all over the United States. And it's not just this letter, apparently. There are others. There was a letter written by a GI who was hospitalized for wounds suffered after a grenade attack. It was published in his local hometown newspaper. His father called him up and said, hey, nice letter, congratulations. And he was like, what letter? I didn't write any letter. While in the hospital. Now, interestingly, this is not the first time in recent history that almost an identical thing has happened. Turns out, back in January, remember back in January, that is, you know, like 10 months ago, there was a letter published in newspapers all across the United States, signed by many different people, that said that this administration was doing this extraordinary job. Here, the letter said, when it comes to the economy, President Bush is demonstrating genuine leadership. The growth package he has proposed takes us in the right direction by accelerating blah, blah, blah. Right? It was pushing the tax cuts. Turns out it was a Republican National Committee form letter. If you were on the RNC's email list, you had an opportunity to push a button and send this letter over your signature to your local newspaper, and hundreds of Republicans did around the United States. And now the military is doing the same thing again. Is the White House abusing its power to use government agencies for partisan political purposes? Sure looks like it. Stay tuned. You're in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Hey folks, John Madden here to tell you about the October Best Buys at Ace Hardware. Come in today and get Ace Royal Touch Satin Wall and Trim Paint for only $16.99 a gallon, our lowest price of the year. Backed by the Good Housekeeping Seal and a 25-year warranty, the Ace Royal Touch Satin is great for kids' rooms and other heavy-use areas. Plus, the helpful folks at Ace can help you match over 1,400 colors. So hurry into your local Ace Hardware throughout the month of October. Ace, the helpful place.
Quantities limited. Available at participating stores.
I have a question for the men out there. What do you think your odds are of developing prostate problems? 1 in 1,000? 1 in 300? Actually, my doctor told me they're 1 in 3. But you can help beat those odds with One A Day Men's Health Formula. One A Day Men's is a complete multivitamin with 21 nutrients plus lycopene, which Harvard studies have linked to prostate health. So now that you know your risk, help beat the odds. Take One A Day Men's Health, the multivitamin with more for your health.
Excuse me, ma'am.
Yeah?
Have you bought your Halloween candy yet?
Not yet.
Well, I've got the best candy idea for you to give away on Halloween.
Really?
Juicy gummies.
Juicy gummies?
That's right. Juicy gummies are the first gummies made with real fruit juices. They're fat-free and they are so good.
Mmm.
You have to try them all. The peach rings, froggies, creepies, and much, much more. They're all delicious.
Yeah, they are.
Juicy gummies come in playful packages, fun shapes and colors. All the kids will be at your door when the word gets out that you're giving away juicy gummies on Halloween.
Mmm.
Juicy gummies come in 30 and 50 pack bags, so there's plenty of candy for the whole neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And did I mention that these gummy candies are actually made with real fruit juices and fat-free?
Wow.
So if you haven't bought your candy for Halloween, rush on out to Walmart, Kmart, Eckerd's, Dollar General, 7-Eleven, Fred's, Kerr Drugs, Brooks Pharmacy, and many other stores nationwide.
Sorry, ma'am. You can't eat all of our samples.
Aw.
Well, this store here sells juicy gummies.
Ooh, thanks.
Look for Juicy Gummies, America's first gummy made with real fruit juices. Boy, they're delicious.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Our scientists have studied and found that our listeners have a lot of stress from the lack of being able to get their questions and comments off of their minds, which can cause nausea, vomiting, and eventually will make you strip down, sit in a corner, and drool while counting pretty yellow and pink elephants flying around.
Okay.
So now, IE America Radio Network is proud to present the IE Hotline. Call and give your comments.
I just wanted to call and let you know your internet station totally rocks off the chart.
Your suggestions.
I think Doug Stephan should be on all day, 24/7. Yeah.
Your questions.
Got a question about Bush. How the hell do you put food on your family? What is that?
Crop growth and biologic growth are by the good will and volitional control.
Or whatever the heck that just was. So call 1-800-397-8255 and leave a message for any one of our on-air talents. 1-800-397-8255. Operators are standing by. Just kidding. You have to leave a message.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Shake it up. Exposing the con and conservative. This is talk radio for the rest of us. Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. A little sound clip for the month. Here's Joe Wilson.
But we'll see. I mean, I don't think we're going to let this drop. At the end of the day, it's of keen interest to me to see whether or not we can get Karl Rove frog marched out of the White House in handcuffs.
Yeah, very interesting, very interesting.
Joe Wilson, and you know, what is happening? The White House is hoping this story is going to go away. Will it? Will it? It'll be interesting, he says.
And trust me, when I use that name, I measure my words.
Yeah. And it's going to be... So is the White House abusing its power to use government agencies for partisan political purposes? We've got, you know, at the timing of this thing really shows how it just incredibly, I mean, spamming newspapers. Consider the risk of being outed. Now they've been outed, right? But still, they were willing to take that risk because this administration is so desperate to spin this thing positively. And in fact, I predict that by the elections of next year, by November of 2004, they will have succeeded. That most of Iraq will be relatively stable. We are pouring money into there so fast. An article in the New York Times about how several American companies receive government contracts by having people in the government call them up and say, hey, I've got a couple $100 million for you. I mean, they didn't even have to bid on. They didn't even know that the things were being put up for bid. They were being called by people in the Pentagon or in the administration. And that the administration is asking for, you know, even though the administration's own figures show that Iraq could really only absorb about somewhere between $6 and $10 billion in development money over the next 12 months. I mean, that you can only spend money so fast. There is a finite limit. They're asking for $20 billion for development. And it's supposed to be for 1 year. Well, there's a growing consensus, and now there are some leaks from within the administration, obviously unintentional, that the reason why they're asking for as much money as they are is that they want to have enough cash to last all the way up to the November 2004 election, so they don't have to come back to Congress 12 months from now asking for more money in a way that may not look so hot. They don't want to be back in this fight again just before the elections. So here we've got this administration spinning this thing as hard and as fast as they can. You got Condi Rice last week talking about how we're going after Saddam Hussein because he had the intention to have WMDs. I mean, we have changed the rationale of the war from he was an imminent threat to he had something to he had the ability to make something to now he was thinking about it. But these guys have figured out, you know, between Fox News and the vast right-wing echo chamber out there of talk radio, and the compliance that they have in the media to promulgate a right-wing message, that if Goebbels was right, that if you tell a big enough lie and you tell it often enough, people believe it, and that's what this administration is going for, and they are going for it as hard and fast as they can. And, you know, but look at what's really going on here right now in the Department of Defense. The Army is asking a team of doctors to see if combat stress and long deployments are linked to the surge of suicides among soldiers stationed in Iraq. 478 soldiers from Iraq have been sent home for mental health reasons because they don't have any mental health resources in Iraq. Suicides are not included in the casualty counts. They're different categories, so we have no idea how many there have been, but there are these reports that have been coming out, and now the Army's actually do it. They're very concerned about it. What is this White House abusing its power to use government agencies for partisan political purposes? Your thoughts, 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. Helping you defend the water cooler wars, this is Tom Hartman. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
It's been said that the early bird gets the worm. The late one might choose the nut. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. People are able to recall vividly what they've done in the past as well as plan for the future. This ability to visualize experiences and imagine outcomes is called episodic memory. Scientists had long believed that episodic memory was found only in humans. Nicola Clayton is a neurobiologist at the University of Cambridge. She says animals were thought to be stuck in the present time, unable to recall the past or plan ahead.
So whereas you and I can travel mentally back in time and think about a past event, what you did last birthday or even what you had for dinner last night, and equally we can go forwards in time and imagine what we're going to do tonight, this weekend, for our next holiday or whatever, then animals can't do that. They're bound to the present.
Clayton has found evidence that some birds are not so time-bound. She devised an experiment involving scrub jays. These small birds hide their food in order to recover it later, a process called caching. They apparently remember details about the food they hide. Clayton observed that the jays, when given nuts and worms to cache, would recover only the non-perishable nuts after being separated from the food for long periods. They didn't bother to look for the worms.
It seems to be the exact opposite of being stuck in time, because the animals have got to go back and remember where they put their caches, and equally at the time that they're hiding this food, they've got to think about the future.
In other words, Clayton says the experiment shows that scrub jays possess episodic memory. It also seems to prove that while the early bird gets the worm, the late one opts for food with a longer shelf life. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Animal Talk, your animalological super information highway, helping you with your pets. Every Sunday night, we take your calls, help your pets, always give away some prizes, and talk to celebrities, like from It Is Enough, Dick Van Patten.
I've been listening to your show. It's fascinating. It's very interesting.
We're nuts, aren't we?
I can see why people would call you up. You really know what you're talking about. It's terrific. Very, very informative.
Uh-oh, we got him on the wrong channel.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights, 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central, on the IE America Radio Network.
This is Mike Malloy with the IE America Radio Network. Want to know more about our talk shows and personalities but don't know where to look? Do you want to find out what guests are scheduled or what topics we'll be discussing on our programs? Would you like to participate in live chat or vote in interactive polls? All this and more is available at the IE America Radio website. Bookmark it, stop surfing, and get active. Visit www.ieamericaradio.com today.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
As soon as you're born, they make you feel small by giving you no time instead of it all. Till the pain is so big you feel nothing at all. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be.
Truth in Broadcasting. This is Tom Hartman speaking from behind the good old working class stainless steel microphone high up in the Green Mountains of the People's Republic of Vermont. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. What about this? Is the White House abusing our power to use government agencies for partisan political purposes? Sure looks like it to me. The bully pulpit that they have, they're using extensively. We see the situation now with the FBI bugging the offices of Democratic Mayor of Philadelphia, John Street. Nancy Pelosi of California says this probe raises serious questions about its timing. Also, that they would announce that it's not campaign-related raises even more questions about whether it is campaign-related. Using federal property for photo ops? Have you seen the new picture of George Bush with a halo? There's a copy of it over on our website, on the message board on our website. You can find it at tomhartman.com or liberaltalkradio.com. Using the Office of Homeland Security to track down the Texas Democrats who are trying to flee the redistricting. Amazing stuff going on in Washington, D.C. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Bruce in Columbus, Ohio is on the line. Bruce, what are your thoughts on this?
Hi, Tom. I just want to remind everybody that the Secretary of State's son, Colin Powell's son, is the director of the FCC.
Yeah.
King George now owns freedom of speech.
Well, he's trying to, and what's interesting is that Michael Powell pushed through this thing on a 3-2 vote allow massive corporations to control more of the media, whatever you want to call it, policy.
Right, passing out licenses and, to all the neocons.
Yeah, and now Congress, there's like this, broad, widespread majority of people in Congress, having heard from their constituents, including the NRA that got all upset about this, are trying to do something about it. Now Tom DeLay says he's going to delay it. He's not going to bring it up for a vote. If he doesn't bring it up for a vote, nothing happens.
Well, it's still very scary to me to have that much control in the hands of the president.
Well, I'm telling you, they're talking about moving with the FCC from 35% to 45% ownership rules. I think it should be one corporation gets to own one media outlet. And if you want to own another media outlet, you get to start another corporation. And each one has to operate independently with a separate board of directors. I mean, that's the way it used to be in the United States. And I think that's what we need to go back to. We should be looking at the 35% that we had in place before. And, of course, several corporations, Murdoch with Fox and Clear Channel, have already exceeded that. I mean, they're already in violation of the rules. And without Michael Powell's thing going through, they're going to be in big trouble, which I think is why DeLay is holding this thing up. But even that is I think off the wall. This is something we need to look at. Bruce, thanks for raising that. I appreciate the call.
Bye bye.
Other situations here: abuse of power by this administration. Remember in the late winter of 2003 when the UN was preparing to vote about whether or not we should go to war in Iraq, and the delegations, the homes and offices, the telephones in the homes and offices of the delegations from Angola, Cameroon, Chile, Mexico, Guinea, and Pakistan were bugged. They were known as the Middle Six, the countries that could swing the vote. Turns out that this was apparently instigated by the National Security Agency. It's interesting to note that the NSA is now heading up the new Iraq rebuilding task. The memo is directed at senior NSA officials and advising that the agency was mounting a surge aimed at gleaning information not only on how delegations on the Security Council would vote on any second resolution on Iraq, but also policies, negotiating positions, alliances, and dependencies, the whole gamut of information that could give U.S. policymakers an edge in obtaining favorable results to U.S. goals or to head off surprises, as they said. Look at the way that this administration has politicized science. Abstinence-only education, bringing in all their buddies on the far right of the Christian spectrum and handing them literally hundreds of millions of dollars in exchange for the votes that Falwell and Robertson handed to George Bush. Twisting scientific findings to match policy. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. Where's it gonna stop? Is it gonna stop? Is it possible that they have so much control, that they have such tight control of the media in the United States that nobody's gonna call them on this stuff? I got a joke from Mark in Birmingham. He says, up in heaven, Alexander the Great, Frederick the Great, and Napoleon are looking down on events in Iraq. Alexander says, wow, if I just had one of Bush's armored divisions, I would definitely have conquered India. Frederick the Great says, "Surely if only I had a few squadrons of Bush's Air Force, I would have won the Seven-Year War decisively in a matter of weeks." There was a long pause as the three continued to watch events. Then Napoleon speaks, "And if I only had that Fox News, no one would have ever known that I lost the Russia campaign." Ba-rump. But this is, I mean, so much, it is happening. The sands are shifting, the stories are changing, everything is moving all around. Here, the administration now in Congress are taking aim at the China trade. There's another dimension of this, of the spin that they're putting on these things. This I think is really interesting. This I think is particularly interesting. This was an AP story from today's newspaper that points out that for every the title of the article is "Administration Congress Take Aim at China Trade," and it points out that for every $6 in products that China sells here, U.S. companies sell $1 to China. So there's this huge imbalance, and China is building up this huge pile of American dollars, and we're building up a huge pile of Chinese-made stuff. And the Chinese, in order to do something with those dollars, they're spending some of them to buy things from us. They're spending about one out of every six. And they're buying a lot of our debt. They're helping us finance George Bush's tax cuts for the rich. But the administration, see, this is fundamentally a labor issue. What it comes down to is when you put American workers at $6, $8, $10, $12, $15, $20 an hour up against Chinese workers at 30 cents an hour, 50 cents an hour, there's not a lot of competition. And, you know, historically we prevented that with tariffs by saying, okay, if it's going to take 1 hour of labor to make a pair of shoes, and that hour of labor in the United States costs $15 and in China costs 50 cents, if you want to import shoes from China, you have to pay a $14.50 tariff. We started this in the United States in 1784, before the Constitution was even ratified. We were doing this. And the GATT-NAFTA agreements just stripped so many of these things out. It started with Reagan-Bush. Now Bush, too, he put tariffs back on steel for exactly what I'm talking about here, because he needed to save Rick Santorum's butt in Pennsylvania. And the steel mills in Pennsylvania were freaking out. But they're trying to position this thing as being about currency rather than labor. Get this, this is really about labor. And in fact, the story says, "The moves at the White House come amid fears of a voter backlash in 2004, in part because of the loss of 2.7 million factory jobs over the past 39 months. 2.7 million factory jobs. So what are they going to do? See, the article further says, "Last year, the trade imbalance with China was $103 billion, the largest ever recorded by the United States with any country. And so far this year, that gap is 22% above last year's pace." So what are they going to do? They're going to try and get China to change the value of its currency. China has pegged the yuan, its currency, to the U.S. dollar. And they're going to try and get, and they're trying to spin this thing as it's about currency. The article concludes, "Bush recently told U.S. business leaders that his administration, quote, plans to make sure that China's got a monetary policy which is fair, end quote, to avoid talking about a labor policy that's fair or a trade policy that's fair over here on our end of the water." These conservatives have their heads so far in the ground, it's like they're not acknowledging that there's daylight or sky. I mean, it is mind-boggling. And what's even more mind-boggling to me is how few people are calling them on it. 1-800-TALK-YES is the phone number here if you'd like to be on the program today. 1-800-825-5937. And Charles in California has some thoughts on this. Charles, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I wanted to comment on you mentioned that Rather had interviewed the mothers of the supposed letter writers, and they
right.
said
it wasn't Dan Rather who interviewed them, but his
but
reporter
it was on
did.
The,
yeah,
on that
and
program.
He, and, yeah.
And then the mother said, "No, it wasn't my son." And then the son said, "Well, someone in my outfit, you know, asked me to write that." Now, to me,
asked me to sign
who was trained in journalism, those would be two breadcrumbs on a trail that I would begin to follow, and I think it's a commentary on the state of the media right now that no one is following that story, just as they didn't follow with the, you know, the sales of uranium. Nobody actually followed it back to say, well, who forged these documents? And there's so
right.
many stories like that come up where there's an obvious trail that any journalist would follow, and for some reason it's not being picked up.
Yeah, and my prediction is it won't be. That this is just going to die, just like the same way that they're hoping the Joe Wilson thing is going to die,
right.
although the FBI is now involved there, something may come out. And the same way that so many other things have, you know, I mean, this administration has had so many scandals, I can't keep track of them. You need a database to keep track of the things, the crimes and scandals that this administration has perpetrated and foisted upon the American people, and the phony PR efforts that the Republicans and the cons have been doing. And the media is like, well, you know, yeah,
well, you know,
good point.
Some might say that the reason that these aren't being picked up is because of pressure from above, and I guess in the case of Fox News, that's certainly the case. But for the average paper, like the big city paper, I think it's more a matter of economics than it is any vast conspiracy theory. Because I know from having worked for papers, there was a time when there were two competing newspapers in a city. Each newspaper would have a reporter stationed at basically every government agency, just, you know, looking for news.
Right.
And that's no longer the case now. The papers are more they rely on the news being brought to them, and that means press releases and press conferences and that kind of thing. So they're getting news that's already pre-managed, and there just
yeah.
isn't really a budget to do any kind of investigation. And I think that's for two reasons. That's because of the monopolies. There's not really any reason to be competitive in a lot of major cities anymore and to break the story first, and also because of economics, where the corporations are trying to drain more out of the average daily paper, and so they're making cuts in the editorial side.
Yeah, there's really two issues here. One is that this administration and the Clinton administration did this to a pretty good degree too, although they didn't get away with it as often as this administration, because no matter how much the conservatives scream and wail and cry about liberal bias, read Eric Alterman's book. The bias of the mainstream media is profoundly and decidedly conservative to middle of the road to conservative. But in any case, there's really two issues. One is that the administration is viewing news organizations as consumers of a product, as consumers of information, and the news organizations themselves are. But the administration has figured out that there's a certain kind of packaging that you have to deliver to them. If there's not pictures, for example, associated with a story, it will not make television. Or it'll just marginally make television. If you've got good video, though, you're gonna get that thing on TV. So the photo ops are carefully stage managed. You know, good video. You know, I mean, Arnold did this marvelously in the California campaign. You know, really understood this stuff, or his advisors rather. And the second one is one that I think you just alluded to, Charles, that there was this consolidation of media, but even in the absence of the consolidation, you know, with the three big networks supposedly competing, what's happened is that over the last few years, in I believe all three cases, the news divisions of those networks that used to operate independent, that it used to be it didn't matter whether they made a profit or not, they were viewed as, we are serving the public good. We are providing news because, as Thomas Jefferson pointed out, that's what's necessary for a democracy to work. And we have this sacred trust because we have access to the nation's airwaves. And holding this sacred trust with access to the nation's airwaves, we have an obligation to provide an unbiased, factual, accurate, insightful, in-depth understanding and analysis of the news. And now that they've all moved over to the entertainment division of these companies, and they're just does it make profit or not? How many listeners will it get? So, Charles, thanks for the call. I appreciate your comments there. Freddie in Woodstock, New York, we got about a minute left. Freddie, your thoughts on this?
Hi, Tom. I love your program. Been listening for a long time.
Thank you.
I just think that we're constantly preaching to the choir. And if we don't find ways to go beyond the choir, we're not going to be able to get Bush out of office. And I think one of the tools, some of the lessons we can learn from the gophers or the neocons, whatever you want to call them, they're using the big lie technique. We have to use the big truth technique. Same technique, just but get the truth out there in the same way. Not big complicated explanations, just the way they do it with emoticons. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, bumper stickers. Bush lied,
exactly.
And our guys died.
Just continue those messages over and over, but lots of messages, you know, on every little subject, because they pick it up in a second. You know what I'm saying?
I agree with you, Freddie.
They pick it up instantaneously, and it's out there.
Yeah, good point, and I absolutely agree. And I want to take it to the next step. I think that it's not enough just to throw out slogans. We really need to be working to awaken people to what democracy means and what kind of an opportunity we have here to create democracy all around the world. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of the No Spoon Feeding Zone.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Why do I have to get this cold sore scab now? I've got a job interview this week.
The embarrassment of a cold sore scab is as painful as the sore itself. Do something about it. Try new Camphophonique cold sore treatment for scab relief. It's the only one that targets the scab with a special formula that provides maximum strength pain relief. Plus, it seals in moisture to help prevent cracking, to promote healing. Camphophonique stops pain, promotes healing, ends embarrassment.
Get the good stuff!
Right now would be a good time to come to Napa Auto Parts. Because whether it's brakes, a battery, or even a new set of wiper blades, you'll find what you need at Napa. This is the good stuff. While you're there, pick up a Napa camouflage hat for only $3.99. So come to Napa and get whatever you need for your car and pick up your special edition camouflage hat today.
Get the good stuff!
Napa. Get the good stuff.
Toyota owners, get over to your Toyota dealer and get this feeling. The feeling of winning a $10,000 American Express branded gift card. Toyota's giving away 12 of them, plus a 1,000 more worth $100 each. Just bring your Toyota into your participating Toyota dealer for service and enter. You'll get the very best service performed by Toyota trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and enter for your chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends October 31st. Void where prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents who are valid licensed drivers and 18 or older. Void in Hawaii. Official rules available at toyota.com/owners.
Look, anything related to my physical well-being, I get a second opinion. And that includes the laxative I use. So when I asked my doctor which one he recommended, he didn't hesitate. Colace Stool Softener Capsules. Then I asked my neighborhood pharmacist. She said the same thing. Colace Capsules. Now that's two people who I believe know what they're talking about, recommending one laxative. Colace Capsules.
For more information on the number one stool softener brand recommended by doctors and pharmacists, go to colacecapsules.com.
I get things in my mind, and I say, let's try this.
Dude,
and
here's Nancy in the background.
Nancy.
Oh,
Nancy.
Am I on the air?
Oh. Hello.
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 Sorry.
You're sorry you're on the air?
I'm glad I didn't say something I really shouldn't have said.
Really?
You should have heard what she was telling me a minute ago.
Wow.
Bite me, doughboy. On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio show about animals.
Welcome to the lifestyles of the wet and stinky. We're looking at fishy fat cats and wealthy crustaceans. This is Bloodsucking Leech here, sending you algae-covered wishes and caviar-laying dreams.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
The Mike Mullen Show.
In an inter-
interview with the Associated Press, Kennedy said the case for going to war against Iraq was a fraud made up in Texas to give Republicans a political boost, and the money for the war is being used to bribe foreign leaders to send troops.
Well, Tom DeLay, the bug man.
He reminds me so much of Dennis Hopper's character in Blue Velvet. Remember Frank Booth? What was he sucking? What was it, nitrous oxide? That's what DeLay reminds me of. Only DeLay wouldn't be doing nitrous oxide. DeLay would be doing one of those weird bug-killing chemicals, like parathion. You know, as my understanding, that stuff gets you real high right before it kills you.
That's the lowest thing I've ever heard. The lowest thing I've ever heard coming out of Kennedy's mouth.
This is the Frank Booth character from David Lynch's Blue Velvet. There's no question about that, True Seekers.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Exposing the con and conservative, this is Tom Hartman, the pill that will help you escape the matrix, the Tom Hartman radio program here on the IE America Radio Network. You know, it's interesting, I saw last night on the McNeil Lehrer Report, there was a 12-minute piece on talk radio, and somehow they missed the fact that there is a liberal talk radio network already out there. It exists. It's called the IE America Radio Network. You're listening to it right now. And this gets back to the point that Freddie made about speaking to the choir. I think the choir needs to be energized. We need it is okay to speak to the choir. Of course, we need to speak beyond the choir. But I think first we need to reach out to the choir, because so many of the folks, so many liberals and progressives and people in the middle of the road, I call this program Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. I really think the vast majority of Americans understand the importance of protecting American labor rights, for example, of having a clean environment. I mean, these are not radical left positions, I'm sorry. This is common sense. And there are a lot of people out there who are just in despair. They turn on the radio and they hear these right wing guys and you know, now you got Laura Ingraham and the other woman also ranting, you know, running down environmental protection, bashing labor and trade unions, going on and on and on. And they think that, and they open the newspapers and they read stuff like this thing about China trade. Oh, it's all about China's currency, right? And they see the administration getting away with these lies, and they're in despair. I talk to so many people when I go out and do book tour and stuff, where I'm talking to people who don't listen to this radio program, who don't even know that I'm doing it. They've showed up because I've written a book about democracy, unequal protection, and I'm in a, you know, signing books in a bookstore or something, and they're in despair. And I say to them, you know, hey, there's a, you know, the liberal talk radio network out there. We're growing. We're gaining stations every single week. It seems there's a new station that is picking this thing up. I mean, if you average them over time, it works out to that. Where it's the message is getting out, and we need to broaden that as much as possible. So, you know, spread the word, not just about the network, but about the fact that we're all out there. MoveOn.org. You know, there really is a silent majority. It's us. The True People's Radio, this is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush. It seems some of you are still listening to that Mike Malloy person at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Many chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists when they feel the un-American urge to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. The pain is only temporary, but it is nothing compared to the everlasting furnaces of brimstone hell you will experience if you continue listening to the Mike Malloy Show. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Who says Mike Malloy is rational and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you hate me? You hate me?
Why not put something on that says he's a great goof liberal?
Goof?
Yeah, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. The two latest suicide bombings in Baghdad and nearly every other attack on American soldiers in Iraq were carried out with explosives taken from Saddam Hussein's former weapons dumps, which are much larger than previously estimated and remain unguarded by American troops. The problem of unguarded weapon sites is considerably greater than has previously been stated. The U.S. military now says that Iraq's army had nearly a million tons of weapons and ammunition, considerably higher than the 650,000 tons that senior American commander General John Abizide estimated only 2 weeks ago. Three American soldiers were killed in the area north of Baghdad on Monday, bringing to 97 the number who have died in combat since President Bush declared an end to major hostilities in May. On Sunday night, a soldier was killed when his vehicle hit a landmine about 120 miles north of Baghdad. On Monday, another was killed when an attacker fired a rocket-propelled grenade at an American military patrol in Tikrit. And about noon on Monday, a third soldier was killed and two were wounded when their convoy hit a roadside bomb. Four-term Ohio Congressman Dennis Kucinich officially announced his candidacy for president on Monday, promising to run on a populist platform of nonviolence, universal health care, and workers' rights. Speaking in the Cleveland City Council chambers, Mr. Kucinich promised to revoke U.S. participation in NAFTA and the World Trade Organization, repeal the USA Patriot Act, and create a cabinet-level Department of Peace. Boston's Logan Airport will become the first in the country to participate in a test program to electronically screen cargo before it is loaded on commercial flights. In the 30-day program to begin Tuesday, a screening machine will scan truckloads of cargo at the airport for explosives. The Transportation Safety Administration has focused on passenger and baggage screening, but only a small percentage of cargo is checked before being shipped in cargo or passenger planes. According to a GAO survey, about 22% of air cargo transported in the United States is carried aboard passenger planes. More IE America Network news after this.
Sting for VH1 Save the Music.
When children learn music, they learn to think in a different way. Studies have shown that it helps them to do better work in other subjects. So make sure your kids learn music. They'll learn much more than how to carry a tune.
School music programs are in trouble. Help VH1 save the music in our public schools. Please call toll-free 1-888-VH1-4MUSIC.
VH1 Save the Music, because music education equals brain power.
A plane on an unscheduled joyride was apparently shot down when it flew over a Serbian wedding party where guests were firing guns into the air. Two men were injured when their aircraft crashed near Kraljevo, central Serbia. For IE America Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com.
Hey, folks, John Madden here to tell you about the October Best Buys at Ace Hardware. Come in today and get Ace Royal Touch Satin Wall and Trim Paint for only $16.99 a gallon, our lowest price of the year. Backed by the Good Housekeeping Seal and a 25-year warranty, the Ace Royal Touch Satin is great for kids' rooms and other heavy-use use areas. Plus, the helpful folks at Ace can help you match over 1,400 colors. So hurry into your local Ace Hardware throughout the month of October. Ace, the helpful place.
Quantities limited. Available at participating stores.
Even in the rarefied world of outsized CEO greed, Richard Scrushy stands out. Until he was charged with cooking the company books in a massive fraud to deceive both investors and taxpayers in order to enrich himself, Scrushy was the high-flying honcho of Health South, the nation's largest chain of rehab hospitals. King Richard lived large. Four mansions, several airplanes, more than 40 cars, including a $239,000 Lamborghini, a 92-foot yacht, and ever so much more. With his ill-gotten gain, he even became a, quote, philanthropist. Then came his comeuppance. Not only does he stand charged, but 14 of his top executives have already pled guilty to fraud, the company stock took a nosedive, and Richard himself got the boot as CEO. Some might take this as a lesson in humility, but Richard doesn't know humility from humidity. He continues to wallow in the high life afforded by the millions he took from us taxpayers and Health South investors. Only recently, he paid $3 million to buy a yachting marina. He bought a new jet airplane, and he also sponsored a powerboat race, joining the racers himself as skipper of his $450,000 skater boat dubbed Monopoly. Scrushy, of course, accepts no personal responsibility for his legal problems, claiming that his underlings conducted all of the thievery themselves without mentioning any of it to him. One of his top subordinates, however, testified under oath that virtually every month Richard personally directed him to inflate the numbers so the fraud could continue. Now, this bloated ego is even telling congressional investigators that he won't be available to appear before them, saying that they should watch his TV interviews if they want answers to their questions. This is Jim Hightower saying, Scrushy is the poster boy of arrogant CEOs who think they're the top dogs, and the rest of us are just a bunch of fire hydrants.
What do you think I like about commuting with nature as much as I do, being on the tractor as much time as I do, or spending time with the animals?
Spitting diesel into the ozone layer? You're at one with nature.
You have meddled with the primal forces of nature, and you will atone.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, patriots from coast to coast. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Is this administration's cynical, marketing-driven conservative worldview consistent with the founders' vision or with liberal democracy? I want to get back into a couple things we talked about yesterday, by the way, and just close up a couple of loops. And we'll get to those in just a moment. But there are a few comments that I made and a few comments that I heard back in response overnight, and things that have been said on our message board about, you know, what were the founders up to, and what's the situation with health care. And I just want to lay a little more information on you that I think you may find very interesting and very useful. And then I want to get into how this administration is doing this incredible spin. Just this incredible this machine, and how inconsistent this is with the historic notion of what a government should be. And could it be that this is the first time we've ever had an administration who is headed where the president and the vice president are both former CEOs, corporate CEOs? I think that has a lot to do with it, frankly. George Bush has no training in the law, no understanding of our legal system and how it was set up and our system of government. And, you know, clearly. And it's a tragedy. I think it's very, very harmful to us. 1-800-TALK, yes, if you have some thoughts you'd like to share today. 1-800-825-5937. And Marcus in North Carolina is on the line. Marcus, are you listening on WEED there?
No, I'm listening to you two
on the web.
Yes, on the web. Uh-huh. I didn't know. I don't bother listening to them because they're a bunch of right-wing wackos. But if you're on there, I'm going to start listening.
Yeah, we're on WEED in Rocky Mount, North Carolina from noon to 3, and then they go to Sean Hannity from 3 to 6, so you get to hear both sides.
Well, there we go. That's like, what a concept, media, where you get both sides. Wow, hope it takes off.
It is.
Basically, I thought of a new reason why we should never allow any corporate advertising on news shows, and it should just be like something the BBC does. When you watch the news, you're going for factual information, and you put your brain in this "I am receiving factual information" mode, and then you get an advertisement that wants to capitalize that mode that you're in to feed you facts that they're paying for, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just not fair to the viewer. You shouldn't put news on the same mental playing field as advertisements.
I remember, Marcus, when I back in the late 60s, 1969, and I was working at WITL, AM and FM, Lansing, Michigan. It was the number one station in the market. It was a country and western station, and I did news there from 69 on and off for a year or so, 69, 70, and then I started again around 73, and I did news there until 78 when we left Michigan every morning. I also ran a business, and I was doing other things, but I went in 4 hours a day and did the news in the morning drive, and for a while was actually news director there. And I remember when one guy, this advertiser that we had on that station, called up one day and called me up. I was, the guy in the newsroom. And said, his company, and I forget what the company was. It, what stuck in my mind is that it was a car dealer. But anyhow, he called up and he says, we've got this event going on, and we've got this new product. And, quack, quack, quack. And he said, I want you to come out and cover it for the newscast. And I said, well, I'm sorry, I don't consider that news. And he said, but I'm an advertiser. And I said, well, I'm sorry, that has nothing to do with it. We don't base our news decisions on who advertises in any way at all. There's an absolute wall between programming and sales. And he got all angry with me, and he called up the guy at that time who was the station manager and station owner, Chuck Mefford. His name on the air was Chuck Drake. He is now deceased. And he called Chuck up and just, tried to read him the riot act about me. And Chuck came back in and told me, I told him, sorry, we're not going to cover your event because we have this barrier between, and that's how radio used to be. That's how television used to be. That's how the news used to be perceived in the United States. And as you point out, Marcus, that is changing, and it's changing, and it has changed. And not only was there a wall between the advertiser and the reporters, as it were, the news. But there was also a wall between political viewpoints, even those held by the news people themselves. In fact, for several years at WITL, when I was doing the news there, the guy that I was working for, who's still around, I'm not going to name him, but he was the news director most of the time I was there, was an extreme right-winger. And I was more of an extreme left-winger. We got along quite well, and neither one of us ever put our opinions into the news. I mean, it was just, of course there's some filtering that goes on in just picking what stories you're going to play. But it really worked out. It really worked out because there was that sense back then that that's what you do. You tell the truth. And that's what the news is all about. Marcus, thanks for sharing that and for bringing that point up. I appreciate your call. 1-800-TALK, yes, our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Nick in New Jersey's on the line. Nick, your thoughts on this? Maybe Nick is gone.
No, I'm here.
Oh, you're there. Okay. Hey, Nick, you're on the air.
Hey, okay. I guess you caught me. I wasn't ready when you were going to come on, so you caught me anywhere. Hey, I just got to say that I catch up with you about maybe once every 4 or 5 days. I try to get in with you at least once a week, And let me tell you, I spend a lot of time watching news. I spend a lot of time listening to radio. I spend a lot of time reading and a lot of time on the internet. And I come in and I'm like, yeah, there's somebody out there telling what's really going on out here.
There you go.
And what I do is, I try to put into like maybe one or two paragraph little snippets of what I see going on and how it relates, what I see going on up in my head. If I like to read you one, it's called What Bush Represents to Me.
Mm-hmm.
Is that okay?
If it's quick, yeah.
It's
you
really
know,
quick,
it's,
right? It's really quick.
Reading can
just,
be deadly boring.
I'm pretty good at putting things in a nutshell.
Okay, what does Bush mean to you?
Okay, crisis. We are watching our soldiers and our huge industrial military complex learn the techniques and refine the technology that in a lifetime or two could be used on us. Knowing what this money cartel worships above all, there are devious minds over there willing to use this colossal power of ultra concentration.
Yeah, let me interrupt you, Nick. Yeah. They're already doing it. You show up where George Bush is speaking with a protest sign
and see
if the colossal machine doesn't come down on your head.
Yeah, I know.
It's not something that we have to worry about in the future. This is happening right now here in America.
Right. It's to a point. But I'm talking when... We're watching when it comes to the point where enough people like you and I see this coming, there's going to be a large group of us who are going to do exactly what they're doing in Iraq. They're going to be fine. Not the vast majority, but there's going to be a sizable chunk, well-armed, you know, former military officers, everything else, that are going to be doing the same thing here. And these guys...
Wait a minute. You're talking about internal revolution in the United States, a violent revolution?
Of course. What's the inevitable outcome of ultra-concentrated wealth anywhere in history, in any time?
Well, yeah, I just don't see it happening here. I really don't.
I'm not saying it's going to happen tomorrow. I said in a lifetime or two.
No, because the reason why, Nick, is because we have been through a civil war. We have been through a revolutionary war. We do actually have some memory of history here in the United States. We still have a strong middle class. And frankly, Al Gore got more votes in the last election than George W. Bush did. There are a lot of people in the United States, perhaps the majority, who really and truly understand how democracy should work and what the appropriate values are for this country. And we've got this aberration where we've got a president who was appointed by the Supreme Court. You've got a Congress that they're hanging on by a thread in terms of the number of votes. I mean, the there was no Republican landslide. And you've got a Republican Party that is being held hostage by super rightists, these neocons, and by corporate interests, and they're open revolt within the Republican Party itself. I had the guy who drove George Bush Sr. around when he was on his campaign against Ronald Reagan in the primaries back in 1980, as I recall, and sitting right across this desk from me on this show a couple of weeks ago, talking about how, as a Republican, ever since first working on the Goldwater campaign, and a senior Republican, he has decided to support Howard Dean because the Republican Party has been taken captive by a bunch of radical right-wing wackos. And the reality is, Nick, I believe that people are waking up to that, and I just don't, you know, and it's, you know, you can't. It's just not going to happen. And we wouldn't want it to happen. It would be a disaster for America if anybody. This is the dream of the Tim McVeighs, and on the right and on the left, the extreme. You know, the those who read what's that book that McVeigh read that. Anyway, it's that predicted, you know, in the book, the whole revolution started because the federal building in Oklahoma got bombed, and of course McVeigh went out and did it, and it's just, you know, no revolution happened. People didn't rise up. This ain't gonna happen. But Nick, thanks for sharing that. I appreciate your calling and giving us your thoughts. 1-800-TALK-YES. Kevin in Tampa, Florida, has some thoughts on this. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. Kevin, thanks for calling. What are your opinions on all of this?
How you doing today, Tom?
I am great, but I'll get better. How about you, Kevin?
Well, I'm doing good too. This was interesting. When I turned your show on today and I heard what you were discussing, this is something that actually I've been talking about for several years. It's very interesting to me that your promo for your show is the radical middle. And contrary to the way the news media and right-wing talk radio portrays it, if we take what is perceived as the center generally throughout the country, I'm of the opinion and have been for a long, long time that it's actually a vast majority of the public is really to the left of what is considered center.
Yeah, because what is considered center has been taken hijacked by this right-wing media machine, you know, Reverend Moon and the Mooney Times and Rupert Murdoch and Fox and whatnot.
This started 23 years ago with Ronald Reagan, the great communicator.
Yeah.
Who is a show business guy, just like that one out in California now, getting people to follow him with
About 10 seconds here, Kevin.
His abilities. And if you take away the labels and you just put the issues out flat with no labeling one way or the other,
people vote on
majority
our side every
people
time.
Vote.
That's right. You're absolutely right. Kevin, thank you for the call. I appreciate it, and I agree. This is Tom Hartman, the True People's Radio. We'll be back after this.
Toyota owners, get over to your Toyota dealer and get this feeling. The feeling of winning a $10,000 American Express branded gift card. Toyota's giving away 12 of them, plus 1,000 more worth $100 each. Just bring your Toyota into your participating Toyota dealer for service and enter. You'll get the very best service performed by Toyota trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and enter for your chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends October 31st. Void where prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents who are valid licensed drivers and 18 or older. Void in Hawaii. Official rules available at toyota.com/owners.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinnable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly Magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glasters, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
Even in the rarefied world of outsized CEO greed, Richard Scrushy stands out. Until he was charged with cooking the company books in a massive fraud to deceive both investors and taxpayers in order to enrich himself, Scrushy was the high-flying honcho of Health South, the nation's largest chain of rehab hospitals. King Richard lived large. Four mansions, several airplanes, more than 40 cars, including a $239,000 Lamborghini, a 92-foot yacht, and ever so much more. With his ill-gotten gain, he even became a, quote, philanthropist. Then came his comeuppance. Not only does he stand charged, but 14 of his top executives have already pled guilty to fraud. The company's stock took a nosedive, and Richard himself got the boot as CEO. Some might take this as a lesson in humility, but Richard doesn't know humility from humidity. He continues to wallow in the high life afforded by the millions he took from us taxpayers and HealthSouth investors. Only recently, he paid $3 million to buy a yachting marina. He bought a new jet airplane, and he also sponsored a powerboat race, joining the racers himself as skipper of his $450,000 skater boat dubbed Monopoly. Scrushy, of course, accepts no personal responsibility for his legal problems, claiming that his underlings conducted all of the thievery themselves without mentioning any of it to him. One of his top subordinates, however, testified under oath that virtually every month, Richard personally directed him to inflate the numbers so the fraud could continue. Now, this bloated ego is even telling congressional investigators that he won't be available to appear before them, saying that they should watch his TV interviews if they want answers to their questions. This is Jim Hightower saying, Scrushy is the poster boy of arrogant CEOs who think they're the top dogs, and the rest of us are just a bunch of fire hydrants.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Shake it up. Shake it up.
Welcome to the place where smart people get their news. You're in the Truth Zone with Tom Hartman. News without conflicts of global corporate interest. Is this administration's cynical, marketing-driven, conservative worldview consistent with the founder's vision or with liberal democracy? Jarmila in Eureka, California, has some thoughts on how these things are going down. Jarmila, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. Thanks for calling in.
Good morning, Tom. I love your show. I think you are the best. I enjoy very much how much history you put in your show.
Thank you.
Have a little fewer callers, but more history, which I enjoy very much. I am a refugee from Czechoslovakia. Mm-hmm. I live here 20 years, and I'm American citizen.
Mm-hmm.
And with those letters, it feels like deja vu again, because
yeah.
I used to work as a teacher, and once letter came to school, and all the employees were ordered to sign. It was a letter that would be sent to President Reagan to ask asking him to stop developing weapons, stop building weapons for Star Wars.
This was under Tito was dead by then, right? Who was running Czechoslovakia at that time?
Let's see. It was what was his name? Gustav Husák.
Yeah. So this was in a communist dictatorship.
It was, yeah, it was under communist rule.
You were being given letters to sign to send to the American newspapers or to the American president.
Yes, to stop. Yeah. And I thought it was a great idea. And I asked the boss, I asked the principal, if we are sending exactly same copy to Soviet Union, to Comrade Brezhnev.
Uh-huh.
And I was told to shut up and sign up if I don't want to lose my job.
Yeah. That's, you know, one of the points in our chat room. We have a live chat room that goes on while the program is on, and you can find it if you're on the internet, off tomhartman.com. And one of the folks in the chat room made the comment that if you're in the military, your sergeant or your commanding officers literally hold your life in their hands. So when they ask you to do a favor, you may take that a little differently, you know, as much as you with your employer there.
Yeah, I feel sorry for our soldiers. In Czechoslovakia, they made you to cooperate, either promised privileges, and if you decide, screw your privileges, I am not selling my soul,
mm-hmm.
then you were threatened with harm. And then it reminds me Joe Wilson's wife.
Yes.
It is like mafia.
Yeah. Oh, it's incredible. This administration, Mike Malloy refers to it as a Bush crime family. I see it as a much larger and systemic thing, that there is a breakdown in our entire system of government, and it almost doesn't matter who was in there, as long as we have so much corporate wealth defining, you know, creating the tune that everybody has to dance to. We're going to have this kind of corruption, we're going to have these kind of corrupt politics like Tom DeLay and George Bush and Dick Cheney and Don Rumsfeld and this kind of a situation. Jarmila, thank you very much for calling and sharing with us your experience, and I appreciate that. And I'm sorry to hear that this administration is giving you flashbacks of the communist dictatorship that you grew up under. But it's a good, I think it's good for all of us to hear your story. I really do. Here we have you, speaking of Robert Novak, a exposure of the CIA agent Johnny Mike Spann's identity as the first American killed in Afghanistan is viewed by surprised intelligence insiders as an effort by Director George Tenet to boost the embattled CIA's prestige, Robert Novak wrote 2 years ago, back in December 3rd, 2001. He says old CIA hands were shocked by the breaking of the old rule keeping secret the names of agents in order to protect their families and associates. Isn't this interesting? 2 years ago, Robert Novak wrote an op-ed piece saying how terrible it was that anybody named a CIA agent. And then he does it. What's going to happen from this one? Is this administration going down in flames? Is there a crisis in this administration? I suspect there is, and I'm going to tell you about it right after this break. Stay tuned. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
It's been said that the early bird gets the worm. The late one might choose the nut. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. People are able to recall vividly what they've done in the past as well as plan for the future. This ability to visualize experiences and imagine outcomes is called episodic memory. Scientists had long believed that episodic memory was found only in humans. Nicola Clayton is a neurobiologist at the University of Cambridge. She says animals were thought to be stuck in the present time, unable to recall the past or plan ahead.
So whereas you and I can travel mentally back in time and think about a past event, what you did last birthday or even what you had for dinner last night, and equally we can go forwards in time and imagine what we're going to do tonight, this weekend, for our next holiday or whatever, then animals can't do that. They're bound to the present.
Clayton has found evidence that some birds are not so time-bound. She devised an experiment involving scrub jays. These small birds hide their food in order to recover it later, a process called caching. They apparently remember details about the food they hide. Clayton observed that the jays, when given nuts and worms to cache, would recover only the non-perishable nuts after being separated from the food for long periods. They didn't bother to look for the worms.
It seems to be the exact opposite of being stuck in time, because the animals have got to go back and remember where they put their caches, and equally at the time that they're hiding this food, they've got to think about the future.
In other words, Clayton says the experiment shows that scrub jays possess episodic memory. It also seems to prove that while the early bird gets the worm, the late one opts for food with a longer shelf life. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush. It seems that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens are listening to the Mike Malloy Show at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Surely you can find a more patriotic and productive use of your evening hours. For example, organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly hiding dangerous weapons of mass destruction in your victory gardens. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Music. you in the water cooler wars with Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. This is Tom Hartman of the IE America Radio Network. Yesterday we were talking about the founders of this country, the people who signed the Declaration of Independence and the United States Constitution, and what were their motives? And I got quite a few responses to this. One of them, when I pointed out the comparisons that Pulitzer Prize-winning author, Balin made, I don't have his first name right here, but anyway, in his book, Bernard Balin, in his book To Begin the World Anew, his comparisons between the wealth of old Europe, where you had baronial mansions and the royal palaces, and what was considered wealthy in America, where somebody might have, thousands of acres of land and livestock and whatever, but there was no comparison. And somebody said, well, then why couldn't you just say that what was going on was that the minor rich in America were trying to become the Euro-style rich, that they were just trying to get to build their way up to the top. And in fact, in the rise of American civilization, Charles Beard, the guy who back in 1913 first came up with the idea that the Constitution was written as a way of trying to enshrine wealth in America, told the story of the banks of the Hudson River. He says, and I quote, "From mansions that were castles, the Johnson family ruled in the upper Mohawk Valley with a sway that was half feudal and half barbaric, relying on numerous kinsmen, armed Negro slaves, trained bands of Gaelic retainers, and savage allies from the dread Iroquois to maintain their sovereignty over forest and plain," end quote. That written back in 1913. What Beard completely fails to mention is that the Johnson family was squarely in the middle of several wars of the Indians in the 1760s on behalf of England, that they were loyalists to the crown throughout the Revolutionary War, and that at the end of the Revolution, they fled to Canada. By the time of the constitutional era, Beard noted in Civilization, the wealthy of America who were closest to the crown were reinventing the old British caste system. Again, it's sort of like, he says, in all the colonies, the ruling orders in English fashion demanded from the masses an obedience to which they considered themselves entitled by wealth, talents, and general preeminence. At Harvard and Yale, authority, houses, lands, and chattels determined the ranks of students in the academic role. In churches, Puritan and Anglican alike, congregations were seated according to age, social position, and estate. One old Virginia family displayed its regard for the commoners of the vicinity every Sunday by requiring them to wait outside the church until the superiors were duly seated in the large pew provided especially for them. What he overlooks, again, is that it's not that way anymore, that the wealthiest families of the colonies were the ones who were the most strongly opposed to the Revolutionary War and to the Constitution, because both endangered the stability of their fortunes, most of which were grounded in trader relationships with England. And thousands of these families fled the colonies after the Revolutionary War, both to England and Canada. Beard thought he saw his own era's robber barons among the colonial economic elite. And had the revolution never happened, he might have been right. But the great fortunes loyal to the crown were dispersed or fled, and while we still have the financial empires of Beard's day with us, of the early 1900s, late 1800s, we still have the great fortunes of the Rockefellers and the Carnegies and the DuPonts. We don't have any of the dynasties from the 1700s. Because they were simply not dynastic. They were not that wealthy. And the truly wealthy ones, the ones who really had a pile of money, they up and left and went back to England, took their cash. Then somebody else said, well, okay, you point out that among the founders, most of them were just wiped out. You know, altogether, nine of the men in that room who signed the Declaration of Independence died. Four lost all of their children as a direct result of putting their names in the Declaration of Independence. Every single one had to flee their homes, and after the war, 12 returned to find only rubble. 17 were completely wiped out at the 56, totally financially wiped out. And he says, well, maybe it was just a miscalculation. Maybe they actually thought there wouldn't be such a high price to pay. In reality, the signers wrote in the Declaration of itself, in the Declaration of Independence, the last sentence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. And it was a simple statement of fact. The day they signed that document, each one legally became a traitor and was sentenced to death for treason by the legal government that controlled their lands and homes. As Ben Franklin pointed out, they stood at a point of no return. He said, indeed, we must all hang together, otherwise we shall most assuredly hang separately. Rhode Island Stephen Hopkins was an elderly man. He was in his 60s. And when he signed the document, he remarked to his friend William Ellery, who also signed it, he said, my hand trembles, but my heart does not. But Virginia's Benjamin Harrison, who weighed nearly 300 pounds, commented to Massachusetts's Eldridge Gerry, a short, thin man, with me, the hanging will be over in a minute, but you will be dancing on the air an hour after I am gone. And these guys knew full well what they were doing. Now, what is it that they were signing up for? This is the kicker. This is what I think is just so important to realize. If you read the preamble to the Constitution of the United States, there are 7 points that it makes. And every single word in the preamble, you know those words were struggled and fought over. I mean, this is a very carefully crafted document. And the preamble is one paragraph. And it makes 7 points. And none of those 7 points is to secure property rights. Although that was in the Constitution. But here's what they considered the most important. Number one, union, unity of individual elements. Number two, justice, fair and equal treatment. Number three, domestic tranquility, peace at home. Christopher Largent, by the way, compiled these. And I want to attribute this to him. He's brilliant, the author. Number four, the common defense, defense of the country. Number five, our general welfare, to enhance our sense of well-being. Number six, liberty for ourselves, freedom now. And number seven, liberty for posterity. And what's particularly interesting is that back in the 1700s, when people wrote things, they typically capitalized the noun that was the subject of the sentence and the object of the sentence. And they would capitalize randomly words in order to emphasize them. There were these very strict rules for capitalization. You read things from the 18th century and before that, and you find that there's all this nuance that was built into the English language that is lost now. And if you look at, and I recommend, read the preamble to the Constitution of the United States, you will find that there are only 4 words that are not proper nouns. I mean, the United States of America, of course, is capitalized. Now, there are 5 words, excuse me. There are five words that are not proper nouns that are capitalized. In other words, that are intended to stand out. The first one is people, we the people of the United States. The other 4 words are justice, tranquility, welfare, and liberty. Let me read this one sentence to you that makes these 7 points that these people fought and died for. We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, and justice is capitalized. Ensure domestic tranquility, and tranquility is capitalized. Provide for the common defense, all in lowercase. Promote the general welfare, and welfare is capitalized. And secure the blessings of liberty, and liberty is capitalized. To ourselves and our posterity do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. And that's the gift that we have been given. That's this extraordinary gift that we have been given, that this administration is squandering in such a cynical fashion. And that I think Americans are waking up to. I mean, look at the cynicism of this. Here, John Stauber sent me this. He's the author of Weapons of Mass Deception, and I'm just going to read it straight. He's a U.S. Secretary of State. Colin Powell was a military PR man in Vietnam. One of his assignments was to help manage the crisis created by the publicity surrounding the massacre of civilians by U.S. troops at My Lai. Now, as the Bush government increasingly uses Saddam Hussein's brutality as its primary rationalization for the war, Powell is revising and spinning history by traveling to and invoking Halabja, the site of Saddam's gassing of Iraqi Kurds. Powell dedicated a memorial in Halabja in late September and declared that the world should have acted sooner against Saddam after that 1988 massacre. You got this? I mean, this is the spin, okay? We took this guy out because he was so evil, because he killed all these people with this gas. And Colin Powell goes over and places a plaque there and says, "We never forget." However, John Stauber writes, as we point out in Weapons of Mass Deception, which is a book that he co-authored, when the 1988 gassings took place at Halabja, Colin Powell was the National Security Advisor for the Reagan-Bush administration, and Saddam was the Reagan administration's ally. Saddam's chemicals, now called weapons of mass destruction, came from the United States and other Western countries. When the U.S. Congress attempted to act against Saddam after the 1988 Halabja gassing, when the Democrats in the United States Congress tried to do something about this, Colin Powell and the Reagan-Bush administration made sure that the Prevention of Genocide Act, which was promoted by Democrats in Congress, the Prevention of Genocide Act died in Congress, and the issue died in the media. Is this administration's cynical, market-driven, marketing-driven, really, conservative worldview consistent with the founders' vision or with liberal democracy? Here we have Condoleezza Rice. And she is just, I mean, this is getting almost desperate. This, first of all, you know, she's trying to justify going in. Now imagine if we had gone into Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe's in terrible shape. Or Kenya. I haven't been to Kenya recently, but I've been there many times when Daniel Arap Moi was the dictator and president, you know, the president for life. And, you know, there were times in the early, late 70s, early 80s when it wasn't so bad, but it just, you know, kind of, and but in Zimbabwe right now, it's a mess. And Mugabe, the guy's a, so if we went in there and we cleaned it up and we said, hey, we did a good job, you know, I think everybody would agree. Wonderful. If that had been something that we had all debated in the beginning, if we had all said, hey, you know, let's figure out who are the most despotic dictators in the world and let's go in and clean them out. Let's start with Burma and Zimbabwe. Those are the two worst, in my opinion. And China might be number three. There are those who argue that China is changing. But anyhow, but, you know, Saddam was a piker. But anyhow, here's Condi spinning this thing. Hang on just a sec. Got it in the wrong place. Here's Condi spinning this thing.
The war on terror is greatly served by the removal of this source of instability in the world's most unstable region.
Right.
And the
actually, yes, maybe. If we have produced stability, and I am predicting that by the elections of 2004, things will be much better in Iraq. And it's going to be a positive for George Bush. If we have, then perhaps we have helped stability. But if you go back and you look at what did Osama bin Laden say, he said, America will never feel secure until we feel secure. But I digress.
And the people of Iraq are free.
Yeah, well, again, arguably. And I don't want to get into this whole thing of hers, but here's Joe Biden and his thoughts on this. This is from the, I believe this is from the McNeil-Lehrer report.
I say, Mr. President, take charge. Take charge. Settle this dispute. Let your Secretary of Defense, State, and your Vice President know. This is my policy. Any one of you to divert from the policy is off the team. Take charge.
Yeah, now see, what has happened is, and the Washington Post did this article, Rice under fire, security advisor blamed for muddles in foreign policy, is that things aren't going well. This is today is day 246 of the search for weapons of mass destruction. Day 757 in the search for Osama bin Laden. And they're looking for Saddam Hussein. I mean, it's like, change the subject as quick as you can. And so there's all this finger pointing going on. And the, you know, and Condi and the White House just seems to be melting down. And outside the administration, people are just shaking their heads going, what is going on? Something has got to change. I mean, we've got to change this thing. This is not the way it's supposed to be. And how is it going to change? What is going to happen? Well, here, let me just... A senior State Department official, this is from the Seattle Times, reprinting the Washington Post. A senior State Department official said, if you want a one-word description of the National Security Council, this is Condi Rice is the head of this, since January 21st, 2001, which is when she took charge, when George Bush came into office. He said that single word is dysfunctional. Back in July, Condi Rice admitted that she hadn't read the most authoritative pre-war assessment of intelligence on Iraq's weapon program. And everybody's going, what's with this? And then she says she hadn't read about the CIA doubts about uranium in Africa, even though her staff had received two memos and she had received a phone call from CIA Director George Tenet. And the Washington Post says, in particular, she will never discipline Don Rumsfeld when he undercuts decisions that have been made, never any sanctions, never any discipline, he never paid a price. The White House is coming unraveled, and as a result, our foreign policy is entirely focused on Iraq and nowhere else, and what's going on in North Korea. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of the True People's Radio.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation, but how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
There are over 200 laxatives on the market today, and the one doctors recommend most is Colace Stool Softener Laxatives. That's because over the years, doctors have learned stimulant-free Colace capsules provide comfortable relief their patients can rely on. If you suffer from occasional bouts of constipation, try Colace capsules. If you do, we're sure we'll receive another important endorsement. Yours. For more information on the number one stool softener brand recommended by doctors, go to ColaceCapsules.com.
Why do I have to get this cold sore scab now? I've got a job interview this week.
The embarrassment of a cold sore scab is as painful as the sore itself. Do something about it. Try new Camphophonique cold sore treatment for scab relief. It's the only one that targets the scab with a special formula that provides maximum strength pain relief. Plus, it seals in moisture to help prevent cracking, to promote healing. Camphophonique stops pain, promotes healing, ends embarrassment.
Excuse me, ma'am.
Yeah?
Have you bought your Halloween candy yet?
Not yet.
Well, I've got the best candy idea for you to give away on Halloween.
Really?
Juicy gummies.
Juicy gummies?
That's right. Juicy gummies are the first gummies made with real fruit juices. They're fat-free and they are so good.
Mmm.
You have to try them all. The peach rings, froggies, creepies, and much, much more. They're all delicious.
Yeah, they are.
Juicy gummies come in playful packages, fun shapes and colors. All the kids will be at your door when the word gets out that you're giving away juicy gummies on Halloween.
Mmm.
Juicy gummies come in 30 and 50 pack bags, so there's plenty of candy for the whole neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And did I mention that these gummy candies are actually made with real fruit juices and fat-free?
Wow.
So if you haven't bought your candy for Halloween, rush on out to Walmart, Kmart, Eckerd's, Dollar General, 7-Eleven, Fred's, Kerr Drugs, Brooks Pharmacy, and many other stores nationwide. Sorry, ma'am, you can't eat all of our samples. Well, this store here sells juicy gummies.
Ooh, thanks.
Look for Juicy Gummies, America's first gummy made with real fruit juices. Boy, they're delicious.
Tia Carrera is on the front in Playboy.
I think what you have done is give a little more license to people who have a few more years on them.
Probably. A few more years on them.
Well,
yeah. Stop. A few more years on them.
No, I'm talking about now.
Like the tread on a tire.
Well, never mind. I can't make it better.
When I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 48.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday for Animal Celebrity Boxing.
Boxing kicks butt.
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
Yeah, what a cat.
And that dog on ice, Tanya Harding.
Yeah, that dog will fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network.
Sunday.
Show.
Gizmo's back on the line in Tucson, Arizona.
First off, I'd like to tell you I'm on Sirius Radio 145 Left, and say hi to my other trucker buddies out there that listen to you, Kodiak and James. And
great.
I pulled this 18-wheel car over to the side of the road to speak with you. I've read a couple articles that suggested that Bush Sr., had he gotten a second term, would have followed pretty much the same lines to go to war with Iraq. I'm wondering if there wasn't some kind of conspiracy all the way back to the 2000 election to get Jr. in so he could go ahead and fulfill the plans designed for their father in his second term. I enjoy your program. You're very informative, and I've learned a lot from listening to you, and I appreciate your program, Tom, so keep it up.
Well, thank you, Gizmo. That's very kind of you, and thanks for pulling the 18-wheeler off to the side. I didn't realize you were driving a truck. That's remarkable.
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Rainy day people always seem to know when it's time to call. Rainy day people don't talk, they just listen till they've heard it all.
And it's time for the silent majority to start speaking out, exposing the con and conservative. This is Tom Hartman bringing you uncommon sense from the radical middle. Here's the situation. We just have a couple minutes left in this hour, and I want to summarize this. It's important that everybody understand exactly what's going on here in the White House, because the future of the world is literally at stake. I think that Colin Powell must have some of the most sleepless nights. I'm horrified by particular the behavior of his son Michael at the FCC, and by the cynical, his cynical behavior at Habjala and his willingness to lie before the United Nations. You know, he's a good soldier. He's doing what he's told. But I also believe that he's taking seriously the job of Secretary of State, the job that he inherited ultimately from Thomas Jefferson, and that, as Secretary of the State, you've got this faction within the White House of these people who call themselves neocons, the new cons, the new conservatives, because they are they're not really conservatives. They're radical revolutionaries. They are trying to change the world in a way that conforms to their own view of how things should be. And their vision is not a democratic vision. Their vision is a vision of empire. And if they had their way, I suspect, if they were fully unrestrained, we may well have, the world may well have been plunged into an Armageddon-style war. I mean, the war to end all wars. And there are some in this administration who think that that would be a good thing. You'll remember Ronald Reagan saying to the ambassador from Israel over dinner, this is in my book, Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight. I don't have it in front of me, so I don't have the exact reference. But, you know, saying to him, you know, the Bible says the war of Armageddon is going to come and everybody's going to be destroyed and then the dead will rise. And he says, and Reagan said, I think I'm going to see it in my lifetime. And so you got this battle going on inside the White House between Colin Powell on the one hand and Cheney and Rumsfeld on the other, and Condi Rice in the middle. And what a mess. So, you know, our prayers for our nation are needed. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Tiananmen Square. It's coming from a field that this ain't exactly real. Or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from sirens night and day, from the fires of the...
You've
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush with a helpful hint to resist the wicked and shameful addiction that causes some of our otherwise mentally healthy citizens to tune in to the Mike Malloy Show weeknights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I suggest that you recovering Malloy listeners spend these 3 hours simply standing in your yards, saluting the flags on your houses, apartments, or trailers, or whatever you little people live in. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. We're having a...
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. Three American soldiers were killed in the area north of Baghdad on Monday, bringing to 97 the number who have died in combat since President Bush declared an end to major hostilities in May. On Sunday night, a soldier was killed when his vehicle hit a landmine about 120 miles north of Baghdad. On Monday, another was killed when an attacker fired a rocket-propelled grenade at an American military patrol in Tikrit. And about noon on Monday, a third soldier was killed and two were wounded when their convoy hit a roadside bomb. The two latest suicide bombings in Baghdad and nearly every other attack on American soldiers in Iraq were carried out with explosives taken from Saddam Hussein's former weapons dumps, which are much larger than previously estimated and remain unguarded by American troops. The problem of unguarded weapon sites is considerably greater than has previously been stated. The U.S. military now says that Iraq's army had nearly 1 million tons of weapons and ammunition, considerably higher than the 650,000 tons that senior American commander General John Abizide estimated only 2 weeks ago. Boston's Logan Airport will become the first in the country to participate in a test program to electronically screen cargo before it is loaded on commercial flights. In the 30-day program to begin Tuesday, a screening machine will scan truckloads of cargo at the airport for explosives. The Transportation Safety Administration has focused on passenger and baggage screening, but only a small percentage of cargo is checked before being shipped in cargo or passenger planes. According to a GAO survey, about 22% of air cargo transported in the United States is carried aboard passenger planes. Four-term Ohio Congressman Dennis Kucinich officially announced his candidacy for president on Monday, promising to run on a populist platform of nonviolence, universal health care, and workers' rights. Speaking in the Cleveland City Council chambers, Mr. Kucinich promised to revoke U.S. participation in NAFTA and the World Trade Organization, repeal the USA Patriot Act, and create a cabinet-level Department of Peace. More IE America Network news after this.
Sting for VH1 Save the Music.
When children learn music, they learn to think in a different way. Studies have shown that it helps them to do better work in other subjects. So make sure your kids learn music. They'll learn much more than how to carry a tune.
School music programs are in trouble. Help VH1 save the music in our public schools. Please call toll-free 1-888-VH1-4MUSIC.
VH1 Save the Music, because music education equals brain power.
A German woman was found living with 152 sickly animals, including 51 rabbits and 45 cats, in a small high-rise apartment. Animal activist...
Toyota owners, get over to your Toyota dealer and get this feeling. The feeling of winning a $10,000 American Express branded gift card. Toyota's giving away 12 of them, plus 1,000 more worth $100 each. Just bring your Toyota into your participating Toyota dealer for service and enter. You'll get the very best service performed by Toyota trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and enter for your chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends October 31st. Void where prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents who are valid licensed drivers and 18 or older. Void in Hawaii. Official rules available at Toyota.com/owners.
Even in the rarefied world of outsized CEO greed, Richard Scrushy stands out. Until he was charged with cooking the company books in a massive fraud to deceive both investors and taxpayers in order to enrich himself, Scrushy was the high-flying honcho of Health South, the nation's largest chain of rehab hospitals. King Richard lived large. 4 mansions, several airplanes, more than 40 cars, including a $239,000 Lamborghini, a 92-foot yacht, and ever so much more. With his ill-gotten gain, he even became a, quote, philanthropist. Then came his comeuppance. Not only does he stand charged, but 14 of his top executives have already pled guilty to fraud, the company's stock took a nosedive, and Richard himself got the boot as CEO. Some might take this as a lesson in humility, but Richard doesn't know humility from humidity. He continues to wallow in the high life afforded by the millions he took from us taxpayers and Health South investors. Only recently, he paid $3 million to buy a yachting marina. He bought a new jet airplane, and he also sponsored a powerboat race, joining the racers himself as skipper of his $450,000 skater boat dubbed Monopoly. Scrushy, of course, accepts no personal responsibility for his legal problems, claiming that his underlings conducted all of the thievery themselves without mentioning any of it to him. One of his top subordinates, however, testified under oath that virtually every month Richard personally directed him to inflate the numbers so the fraud could continue. Now, this bloated ego is even telling congressional investigators that he won't be available to appear before them, saying that they should watch his TV interviews if they want answers to their questions. This is Jim Hightower saying, Scrushy is the poster boy of arrogant CEOs who think they're the top dogs, and the rest of us are just a bunch of fire hydrants.
The Mr. Rogers Parenting Book. Fred Rogers, a pleasure to have you here.
What I'm hearing you say is that you delight in creating community.
I do. I think thinking about things and working through problems and issues is an important tool.
I'm just thinking that the world could take some lessons from the Doug Steffen neighborhood.
Doug Steffen's Good Day
on the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome back. Patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in the American way from coast to coast. This is Tom Hartman, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Today, in the Independent of the United Kingdom, the independent newspaper, it's called the Independent. It's one of the it's the largest of the. See, in the UK, when you get a newspaper, you know what you're getting. There are those that are on the left. There are those that are on the right. In the United States, well, you can get the one on the right. That's the Mooney Washington Times. And everybody else, you know, sort of says, well, you know, we're not going to take a position. Everybody's afraid to be on the left. But anyhow, they've got the Independent in the UK. All the president's votes. Something very odd happened in the midterm elections in Georgia last November. And they get into this issue that I've talked about in several articles that I've written. And that our guest this hour really is one of the two or three people on planet Earth who made this story happen, who brought this story to the public's attention. And are the worries about electronic voting starting to gain some traction? I'm very pleased to have on our program today Bev Harris. Bev Harris has provided numerous articles on voting machine ownership, errors, and security to news publications worldwide, including to me,
for the first article I wrote on this over a year ago, as I recall, for CommonDreams.org about voting machine insecurity. And she has a book called Black Box Voting and a website, blackboxvoting.com. And Bev has been on the program before. In fact, Bev was on this program back when I was doing it just here in Vermont, in a small little station in Burlington, Vermont. So, Bev, welcome back to the Tom Hartman program.
Well, hi, Tom. Nice to talk to you again.
Nice to talk to you again, too. It's been a while. Have you seen this story in The Independent today?
Yes, I have. Yes, there's a couple of good stories out about this. There's also one in Wired News from yesterday. A couple of real good stories about what's going on in Georgia.
So do you, I have been saying from the get-go that it seems to me that either Georgia got hacked, the state of Georgia, either they got hacked or that you know, there was a computer error and that all of the winners became losers and all of the losers became winners. Does it seem like it was something that simple or is it something more complicated? What do you think happened in Georgia?
Well,
first of all, let our listeners know the setup here. Georgia was were they the only state in the United States to have absolute touch screens with no paper trail at all?
I think they were the first one to go 100% touch screen, right.
Right. So there was no way of knowing once a person pushed that screen what happened to their vote.
Right.
And so, okay, so I interrupted you.
Well, Georgia is the poster child because of that. Now, I should also tell you, though, that Maryland has gone 100% touchscreen, so the same exact company, and Arizona is going that direction, and Ohio is heading that direction also, as is San Diego, Alameda County, and Los Angeles. So this is taking off like wildfire, and it could be about as destructive to our vote as wildfire. In Georgia, there were many anomalies in the election, but what really gets us is that we now know that the election was conducted on software that was actually illegal software. They have no idea what was in those programs because they were changing the programs right up until almost the eve of the election, and nobody examined it.
Yeah, you were the one, in fact, you were the person who, in surfing the Internet, using just a Google search, came across is it Diebold or Diebold?
Diebold.
Across the Diebold website and found an FTP site, a file transfer protocol site. It's kind of the back door to a file storage area on their website that was just publicly available and was not password protected.
Right.
And looked in there and found this file called Rob Georgia. and made all sorts of interesting discoveries. Yeah, that you must not be there. I mean, I can just imagine over at their headquarters, they have a dartboard with your picture on it or something.
They need to do their job and protect our vote. I not only found Rob Georgia, which in the Rob Georgia folder, by the way, it contained a number of files, hundreds of files actually, and it said replace the voting system files with these. It had instructions to replace the files. I found another one called Georgia, June 28th, 2002, which also had instructions to replace. And I found a number of other programs which had instructions to replace the Windows operating system in the touchscreens. So we were running around replacing programs, and no one quite knows what was in the replacements.
Isn't that necessarily a bad thing? Wouldn't you think that as computers become more sophisticated, as your program gets better and better, you want to upgrade your computers?
Well, it's against the law, actually, to do that without certifying it. In Georgia, there is a very specific law which tells you that in order to make any program modification, it has to go back through national certification. Unfortunately, they skipped that step, and they took it straight off of the desktop of some programmers in Canada, stuck it on the Internet, it got picked up by some technicians in Florida, and put on all the machines down there. So nobody looked at it at all except a couple programmers in Canada.
In Florida or in Georgia?
The program used in Georgia was submitted actually off the desks of some programmers from Canada. And they programmed it in Canada and stuck it on the Internet and then instructed the techs down in Georgia to pull it off the Internet and put it on the Georgia voting machines, replacing the certified program with something else.
And has anybody looked at that something else that the certified program was replaced with?
Nobody has yet filed any report on what that was. By the way, it wasn't just one time. They did it about six or seven times, it looks like. And the program is compiled, so it would take somebody to actually reverse engineer it to find out what's in it. But there were a number of changes, and you know, because of that, nobody knows what was really on the machines. And since then, they have actually wiped the machines clean and replaced everything on them, and as I understand it, gotten rid of the memory cards, which are like the ballot boxes that hold the votes. They just said they copied them onto another CD, so they didn't need to keep them. Now, to give you an idea how bizarre that is, you know, we have to keep a ballot box for 22 months. A ballot box is a fairly large thing. These memory cards have as much information as the ballot box. They're the electronic equivalent, but they're the size of a credit card. Now, my question is, if you can keep ballot boxes for 22 months, why can't you keep a stack of things the size of a credit card? Why do we have to get rid of those and say, oh, we had to copy them all onto a CD and get rid of those things? I find that very suspicious, frankly.
You're not suggesting that a corporation, that this was something within the company. I mean, my take on it was that if the thing was hacked, that it was some rogue hacker, you know, somebody who might have been an employee of the company, but not done with the knowledge of the management.
Well, who knows, you know. Actually, nobody knows. We do know that with Diebold, it's got a situation where you've got a contingent of programmers out of Canada, many of them who, by the way, are not even Canadian citizens. They come from Czechoslovakia and Russia and Poland and Hong Kong. And then you also have another contingent in Texas and another contingent in Ohio. And my theory is that the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing, and neither hand knows what the foot is doing sometimes.
So you think this was just a screw-up?
Not necessarily. Now, there's more to it than that. I've actually gotten a hold of their Bugzilla file, which is where they are supposed to log everything that's a bug. Now, these patches or these program changes were ostensibly to change something that was a bug in the program. Interestingly enough, the Bugzilla file seems to have been systematically purged of all Georgia records. And you can
just
tell
Georgia?
Because the numbers, it's numbered sequentially, and the numbers are also missing.
And this is just the state of Georgia?
It seems to have nothing in it. Now, you have to understand we have interviews and memos that show that there was a huge amount of activity in Georgia, replacing things and having all kinds of problems with these machines. And when that happens, the procedure is that it needs to be logged into a bug file. But there are no bug reports that I can find in Bugzilla for Georgia at all.
Remarkable. I wrote about this way back when, and you and I talked about this. And in fact, I interviewed Charlie Matulka, who was the guy who ran against Chuck Hagel. You know, but in Georgia in particular, because I lived in Georgia for 16 years in Atlanta, and you know, I'm somewhat familiar with Georgia politics, and I was just astounded that Saxby Chambliss, who was a Johnny-come-lately to politics, who was a Vietnam draft dodger, could run against Matt Cleland, who was an incumbent senator, who had the power of the incumbency, who was highly respected, who was well-liked in a state that was majority Democrat, and Max Cleland lost three limbs in Vietnam. This is a guy who left, you know, both his legs and an arm behind on the battlefield. And Saxby Chambliss comes in and runs a campaign against Max Cleland, accusing Cleland of not being patriotic.
Exactly.
And all the polls were showing that it wasn't working. That the voters were saying, give me a break. We know Max Cleland is a patriot. Don't give us this nonsense, you draft dodging. And that guy, Saxby Chambliss, is now the United States Senator, and Max Cleland is out of a job because of the numbers that came out of these voting machine computers,
right,
which are completely different from the numbers that the polls were showing.
And
this
how
was the
different
election
they
that
were. You know, if you look at the margin of error in a poll is traditionally 3 or 4%. Well, this was a spread of 16 percentage points from the polls. Now, that's way beyond the margin of error. And you also look at the fact that this is one of the races that tipped control of Congress. So it's very concerning when we have all these anomalies and we have this huge political stakes and a quite large anomaly that is statistically extremely unusual, to say the least. So, we do have concerns there. And it seems that this kind of thing, what's so frustrating for me is watching this just roll over America, where you watch one state after the next buy into the exact same machines that Georgia had. And they're spending hundreds of millions of dollars of our money to do this. And it's just stunning to me. And I think we need to start getting the word out to say, let's look at what's really happened here. And it's not old news, because these things are coming to the polling place near you.
Oh, you know, it's incredible. I was talking with the Secretary of State. It's the Secretary of State, isn't it, who...
Yes, usually that's the voting machine, the head honcho in each state.
Right.
And then
they have
a Director of Elections who actually...
Deb Markowitz is the Secretary of State here in Vermont.
Right.
And I was talking with her a couple of weeks ago at a birthday party for a mutual friend of ours. And she said, boy, you wouldn't believe how many people have forwarded to me those articles you wrote about voting machines.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, great, you're going to do something about it? And she said, well, I don't think there's anything to worry about.
I know.
And I said, what are you talking about? Now, this is not a verbatim transcript of our discussion, but this is the essence of it. And I said, you know, essentially, what are you talking about? And she said essentially that, you know, she had talked with the voting machine companies and they had reassured her.
With the vendors.
It was mind-boggling, because she's an intelligent woman. Bev, hang on. I want to get into what happened in California here. We're talking with Bev Harris, blackboxvoting.com. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Toyota owners, get over to your Toyota dealer and get this feeling. The feeling of winning a $10,000 American Express branded gift card. Toyota's giving away 12 of them, plus 1,000 more worth $100 each. Just bring your Toyota into your participating Toyota dealer for service and enter. You'll get the very best service performed by Toyota trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and enter for your chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends October 31st. Void where prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents who are valid licensed drivers and 18 or older. Void in Hawaii. Official rules available at toyota.com/owners.
Tired of making minimum payments on your credit cards? Do you have a lot of credit card debt? Then call DITECH.com right now for a home equity loan with a no closing cost option. Pay off those credit cards once and for all without paying closing costs. A home equity loan from DITECH.com. Just call 1-800-DITECH-1. That's 1-800-DITECH-1. Or log on to DITECH.com for terms and license disclosures. Equal housing opportunity.
Excuse me, ma'am.
Yeah?
Have you bought your Halloween candy yet?
Not yet.
Well, I've got the best candy idea for you to give away on Halloween.
Really?
Juicy gummies.
Juicy gummies?
That's right. Juicy gummies are the first gummies made with real fruit juices. They're fat-free and they are so good.
Mmm.
You have to try them all. The peach rings, froggies, creepies, and much, much more. They're all delicious.
Yeah, they are.
Juicy gummies come in playful packages, fun shapes and colors. All the kids will be at your door when the word gets out that you're giving away juicy gummies on Halloween.
Mmm.
Juicy gummies come in 30 and 50 pack bags, so there's plenty of candy for the whole neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And did I mention that these gummy candies are actually made with real fruit juices and fat-free?
Wow.
So if you haven't bought your candy for Halloween, rush on out to Walmart, Kmart, Eckerd's, Dollar General, 7-Eleven, Fred's, Kerr Drugs, Brooks Pharmacy, and many other stores nationwide. Sorry, ma'am, you can't eat all of our samples. Well, this store here sells juicy gummies.
Ooh, thanks.
Look for Juicy Gummies, America's first gummy made with real fruit juices. Boy, they're delicious.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Another audio clip from the production meeting. Doug Steffen.
What production meeting?
The drive. You know how many radio stations we're on? We must be doing something right, guys.
Imagine if we really tried.
Yeah.
If we don't care and it shows.
Doug Steffen's good day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Yes, I'm calling about the Mike Malloy program. You know, the reason I turned this man off.
Why?
Is because he sounds like an 8-year-old.
Me?
Name calling.
I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not.
You should get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No. I got kids in college.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Shake it up. Shake it up. Shake it up.
Uncommon sense from the radical middle. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. FDR said the liberty of a democracy is not safe if the people tolerate the growth of private power to a point where it becomes stronger than their democratic state itself. That, in its essence, is fascism. Ownership of government by an individual, by a group, or by any controlling private power. End of quote. And is that happy? You know, Bev, we're talking with Bev Harris, Black Box Voting. Bev, I want to talk about your book. I want to talk about your book online. I want to talk about your experience with some of these companies. I know that you've had some legal skirmishes.
Yes.
With them. I want to talk about what happened in California. I want to share the information about what happened in Chuck Hagel's early elections. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff I want to be sure that we don't overlook, because this is like the foundational stuff. So let's start at the beginning. Tell us how your book is doing. Tell us about the book.
Well, we have a book that we've decided to make available free online. We know that some of the people who are most in danger of being disenfranchised from their vote may not be able to afford it, but may have the time, because we have a high level of unemployment right now. They may have the time to get out there and do some activism. So we've made the chapters available online. We're doing a couple chapters every couple days. We've got a couple more ready to go. And it's online, downloadable at blackboxvoting.com. And also, if you go to blackboxvoting.org, you will see an interesting message where Diebold has tried to basically get the site taken down. It will reroute you to another page for another set of downloads if the one is too busy or is downloading slow. So, yeah, the book is doing quite well. I think it's been downloaded about 15,000 times so far, and it's only been on there for a few days. And it contains the material that activists need or citizens need in order to persuade people like your Secretary of State, because it's got tremendous amount of documentation and, real facts and figures.
Yeah. Bev, is there a real live print version that I can buy in bookstores?
Yeah, that'll be out in about 3 weeks. We're going to be getting the whole thing up online chapter by chapter, and then the print version goes in and takes about 3 weeks to get the whole big print run done.
Yeah, but people can pre-order them from Amazon or from
Amazon, local bookseller. For some reason, their computer glitched us out, but I think we'll get back up there fairly shortly. They can pre-order from blackboxvoting.com, and shortly I think we'll have the Amazon link back up.
Okay, great. Well, good luck with that, because this is an important topic, and it's an important book. From what I've seen of it and from what I know, I mean, you and I have worked together on this or talked. Yeah, you have worked on this for a long time, and I've been feeding off your research.
Well, this has been a citizen effort. I'll tell you, there's been a lot of people nationwide that have been feeding me information, which has been really helpful.
Yeah. You said that Georgia was one of the states that threw Congress in this in the 2002 election. Were there any other states where the evidence of this kind of apparent meltdown of the computer systems for whatever reason were so obvious?
Oh, there were many. You know, the governor's race in Alabama was very suspicious. That was with ESNS machines. And basically you had the Democrat winning, and then everyone went home, and then 6,300 votes switched sides in the middle of the night with no explanation. And to this day, they have not come up with an explanation for how that happened. But what happened is they just flipped the governor's race from the winner to the loser. Magic number of 6,300 votes that just showed up, and they have never explained it, and they declined to allow a recount. Of course, you can't do a recount because the machines no longer have ballots. So it's becoming really intolerable. you know, you don't get answers. You can't get these companies to answer your questions.
Why hasn't the governor of the ex-governor of Alabama just, you know, why
sued.
Isn't he out there?
He sued, and he could not get the thing recounted. They said there was no provision in the law to address the issue.
It's really
intolerable. You have, and it's not just there. You have many situations, and one of the things in Chapter 2 of the book, which can be downloaded online,
I've got to ask you to hold right there and hold that thought until we come right back from this break. We're talking with Bev Harris, blackboxvoting.com. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements, and what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
It's been said that the early bird gets the worm. The late one might choose the nut. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. People are able to recall vividly what they've done in the past as well as plan for the future. This ability to visualize experiences and imagine outcomes is called episodic memory. Scientists had long believed that episodic memory was found only in humans. Nicola Clayton is a neurobiologist at the University of Cambridge. She says animals were thought to be stuck in the present time, unable to recall the past or plan ahead.
So whereas you and I can travel mentally back in time and think about a past event, what you did last birthday or even what you had for dinner last night, and equally we can go forwards in time and imagine what we're going to do tonight, this weekend, for our next holiday or whatever, then animals can't do that. They're bound to the present.
Clayton has found evidence that some birds are not so time-bound. She devised an experiment involving scrub jays. These small birds hide their food in order to recover it later, a process called caching. They apparently remember details about the food they hide. Clayton observed that the jays, when given nuts and worms to cache, would recover only the non-perishable nuts after being separated from the food for long periods. They didn't bother to look for the worms.
It seems to be the exact opposite of being stuck in time, because the animals have got to go back and remember where they put their caches, and equally at the time that they're hiding this food, they've got to think about the future.
In other words, Clayton says the experiment shows that scrub jays possess episodic memory. It also seems to prove that while the early bird gets the worm, the late one opts for food with a longer shelf life. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush. It seems some of you are still listening to that Mike Malloy person at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Many chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists when they feel the un-American urge to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. The pain is only temporary, but it is nothing compared to the everlasting furnaces of brimstone hell you will experience if you continue listening to the Mike Malloy Show. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time every Sunday. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com. And join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, right here on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
When you were young and your heart was an open book, you
used to say, live and let live.
Oh, welcome back. This is Tom Hartman on the iAmerica Radio Network, where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? And on it goes. The corporate takeover of voting. Here's a quote from the Independent article, All the President's Votes. This is a quote from Roxanne Jekot, or Jackot. I'm J-E-K-O-T. I'm not sure how she pronounces her name. Computer programmer. Corporate America is very close to running this country. The only thing that is stopping them from taking total control are the pesky voters. That's why there's such a drive to control the vote. What we're seeing is the corporatization of the last shred of democracy. An interesting word, because Mussolini once said fascism should really be called corporatism, because it's the merging of corporate and state interests. We're speaking with Bev Harris, author of Black Box Voting, Ballot Tampering in the 21st Century, a book you can find and download for free at her website, blackboxvoting.com, where you can pre-order the print version. And you may want to do both. Certainly, as somebody who writes and publishes books, I like to encourage people to get the print version as well. Although most of the important chapters of most of my books are online for free as well. I think it's an important and valuable thing, and I agree with you, Bev, for doing it. I think it's great. Now, you were making a point just before we went to the break. You want to finish that up?
Yeah. Well, one of the things we were talking about was, do these things, you know, is there any evidence that any place else in Georgia? Actually, Chapter 2 is a compendium of over 100 elections that were miscounted by machines, and it was documented by major media sources like the Wall Street Journal and so forth. What I simply did was compile together all of these different heavily documented situations, and they're appalling when you look at them together, because they're quite often flipping the race to the wrong candidate, even when it's not close at all, and just plain getting it wrong, often with no explanation or a completely inadequate explanation, like they'll say, oh, it was a bad chip. Well, a bad chip or a bad memory card is like if you have a bad disk in your computer. It doesn't change the vote total. It does. Mm-hmm. It would make it so it doesn't work at all. The idea that you're going to put in the memory card is similar to a diskette. It's just shaped differently. If you put this in and it's bad, it's not going to change Al Gore's votes. What it's going to do is not read anything. And yet they keep coming up with these errors and say, oh, you know, it was a bad disk. That's a ridiculous explanation, frankly, and not adequate.
Yeah, and I think anybody with any computer background,
right,
which is,
you know it doesn't work that way.
Yeah. By the way, we have a chat room that runs live while the program is going on. People can get to it by going to tomhartman.com and just clicking on the chat room link. And one of the folks in our chat room, WhistleAssist666, says he lives in Alabama. He says, I live in North Alabama. And he said to Tom, the consensus in the state is that he's just, this being the Democratic governor who lost the vote in the middle of the night after being declared the winner, because suddenly his name was, say it again, I'm sorry.
Don Siegelman.
He says, the consensus in the state is that he's just another whining Democrat crying about losing the vote, just like Gore. The local news just laughs at him, and they all call him a crier and a whiner. So the right wing
machine. That's a talking point. You know what they do is they put out talking points and they tell people to post these and use them on the air, and they all say the same thing. But the fact is, it's not just Democrats that this happens to. It's both parties. It tends to happen a little more often with Democrats, but I'd have to say that it's the problem is machines miscounting. You know. What we're talking about is not rocket science. We're talking about adding 1 plus 1 plus 1 plus 1. There's no reason for a machine to be off by 6,300 votes. And supposedly these things are tested with all this NASA rocket science testing going on. Well, look, it's not rocket science to begin with. We're talking about adding up votes. It's a very simple thing. We can do it on an Excel spreadsheet. We expect if we have an Excel spreadsheet and we add up a string of numbers that it's not 6,000 off.
Suddenly, at the last minute, in the middle of the night. Yeah, Bev, Chuck Hagel is the guy that I am predicting is going to be the next Republican candidate for President of the United States.
They're working on it. Absolutely.
Yeah, he is positioning himself so carefully and so thoughtfully. And he was the president. He was an advisor to George W. Bush's father, George H.W. Bush. Worked for him in Washington for, what, 20 years? He was in Washington, D.C.
Quite a while,
some long
yeah.
time. And then he moved to Nebraska. Was he originally from Nebraska?
Yes, he was.
Okay, so he moved back home to Nebraska and became president of a company that made voting machines.
Mm-hmm.
Got the voting machines placed in all across the state. Resigned his job as president and ran for the United States Senate against the incumbent Democratic governor. And in the primary races, in the Republican primaries, he won a series of stunning upsets.
Right.
And the statewide race, this being 8 years ago, when he beat the incumbent Democratic governor, was referred to by the Washington Post as the upset of the year.
Right. He was called the lightning strikes twice kid by CNN and Business Week because his victories were just stunning. But
and
what
they were
he didn't
all
do,
counted by machines that were put in place in his state by the company that he was the CEO of.
Right.
Has anybody ever gone back and counted those votes? Has there ever been any kind of an attempt to find out if Chuck Hagel got in as a result of a computer error? So,
too late. Won't let you. And, of course, you talked to Charlie Matulka, his opponent in 2002. Now, Charlie knew that he probably lost. But he has standing as a candidate to request a recount. And even if it's not close, if he pays for it, he can get it. He asked for a recount. He asked how much it would cost to compare those paper ballots, because they had paper ballots. And there's an equal problem, by the way, with those, because we are not allowed to look at them to compare them with the machine. He asked to compare the paper ballots to the machine tally. And they told him there was no provision in Nebraska law to allow that type of a recount. So therefore, the only thing they could do is, if he pays for it, you could run the ballots through the machines, which were tied with Chuck Hagel, his opponent, again. No one was allowed to look at the ballots to see if the machines tallied them up correctly. So, you know, these things are just, as I say, they're really intolerable. They make no sense. And the fact that we can't get straight answers out of the people who are buying these machines, or especially the vendors, who... If you are a citizen and you call up one of these vendors, or if you're a reporter, by the way, more often than not, they will not return your call and will not answer your questions.
Yeah, yeah. And this is, you know, I had Rush Holt on this program, and I said, you know, in Germany, I lived in Germany for a year back in the mid-'80s, and I said, in Germany, they still use, to this day, and this is a country with, what, 56 million people, I think. You know, it's no small, it's not like doing it in Vermont. In Germany, they still use paper ballots.
Right, France too.
And I mean, they still use paper ballots, and they do exit polling, and 1 hour after the polls close, they release the results of the exit polls, and they've been doing this since the 50s, you know, since after World War II, and within an hour after the polls close, they release the results of the exit polls, although it still takes them as much as 2 weeks to count the actual paper ballots. But it's done by civil servants, and it's overseen by the political parties, and there's all these checks and balances, so it's a real number, and it's auditable. And they're always within 0.1%, the exit poll within the ballot, which is tighter than we get in the United States.
Right.
And it costs nothing. And here, we're giving billions of dollars to these private corporations, like Chuck Hagel's former employer, and he's still a stockholder in it, as I recall.
Yes.
Or he was, when I wrote that article last year about it. And we're giving them billions of dollars to hold in their hands the beating heart of democracy, our vote. And then they say to us, sorry, we don't have to... Yeah, I'm starting to rant here. Bev, we've got five callers on the line here. Let's get to them, and we'll have to do... We've only got about 10 minutes left in the show here of program time. Let's try and do these fairly quick. Jim in Madison, Wisconsin's on the line. Jim, say that again, Char. Oh, Jim is gone. How about Paul in South Carolina? Paul?
Hello.
Hey, Paul.
Hey, Tom. First time calling on your show. I just wanted to make a quick comment.
Okay.
Everyone out there, I mean, like, you think something so important as the vote, as you were saying, the beating heart of America, you'd think we'd figure out some way of making it so it was untouchable, like even creating a new agency or something in the government, something protecting it. I mean, something.
Well, they did actually create a new agency with this new Help America Vote Act, and it's apparently been... the head has never been appointed to it. Jerry or Paul, thanks for that call.
Thank you.
Am I right in that, Bev? The head of the I forget the commission's name has not yet been appointed by the president.
Right, and we have a problem when we start appointing cronies to stuff like this. We really need to keep it in the hands of as broad and a broad population of people as possible.
Right. Okay, Jerry in Santa Fe, you have a question for Bev Harris, who we're talking with here on the Tom Hartman Program. Jerry, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi, Tom. Actually, it's Gary, but I've been a professional software engineer for about 20-some, you know, almost 20 years now, and I know it's really hard to write software that doesn't break. It's hard to write, you know, to put together hardware that doesn't break. But one thing I think would go a long ways toward solving some of this, and I've heard it mentioned before, is open source software. Mm-hmm. That's where where the actual source code is out there for everybody to look at, and that's one of the surest ways of squishing bugs in software is to let a community look at it, and it's all open that way.
And that's something I believe Rush Holt's legislation. Thank you, Gary, for sharing that. I think Rush Holt's legislation calls for that, or at least that's what he told me when he was on this program. Is that right, Ben?
Yeah, it's a wonderful idea, and there's other reasons besides just the accuracy of the count. One of the things I discovered when we were looking at the source code for the Diebold stuff was that there were instructions in there to associate the voter's personal information with their voter card. So supposing you had a system that voted 100% correctly, it counted exactly right, but it was doing something like associating the vote with your name, you'd never know that if it wasn't open source.
Right, right. And that's not necessarily something that would be healthy for democracy, particularly in the midst of an administration like this one that punishes its enemies so severely. Gary in Connecticut has a question for Bev Harris. Gary, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Yes, hi. Good afternoon. Hi, Bev. I discovered you through Democratic Underground, so I've been following what's been going on, and because of what you said, I've called my Secretary of State here in Connecticut, and fortunately, they're going to have a paper trail with their machines.
Right.
But a question I have: you had mentioned earlier on how complicated these programs are. Why are they so complicated? As you said, it's just a matter of tallying votes.
Well,
good question, Gary.
Yeah, there are some issues. For example, we want them to be very accessible to the disabled, and we want them to be able to function in various languages. So, and the ballot configurations in various places have become quite amazing, where they have split precincts and all these different ways of doing questions. So there are issues that make it somewhat complex, but not as complex as they make it. You know, I used to work a little bit with accounting fraud, and one of the things you find is if the accountant is telling you it's really, really complicated, you can't understand it, that's the guy you want to be suspicious of. The people that just say, hey, let me show you how it works, A, B, C, and D, are genuinely the ones that have a more honest system.
Yeah, very, very straightforward. John in Long Beach is called 1-800-TALK-YES. John, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. Question for Bev Harris?
Tom, can you hear me?
Hi, yeah.
Okay. The thing is, Tom, I know you can't say this or probably wouldn't say this, but I can say it. You're dealing with a bunch of crooks and a bunch of thieves, and they're using.
Well, there's a lot of people who are starting to think that, John. I mean, it certainly is starting to look that way.
It's not starting to look that way. It is that way, and we keep dilly down. Oh well, maybe. No, it is that way. I mean, how many times do people have to be slapped alongside the head to realize somebody's hitting them?
Yeah.
And that's just.
So, what do you suggest we do about it, John?
Well, you've got to get the Democrats, off their butts to really fight this. Otherwise,
well, I agree. And here's the good news. The Democratic National Committee, the DNC, has just passed a resolution October 4th, just last week. Be it further resolved that the DNC goes on record demanding that all electronic voting equipment used in public elections must incorporate an accessible voter-verified paper audit trail as soon as practical, but in no case any later than the November 2004 election. John, thanks for your comments. Bev, do you think that that's a solution?
Well, we need to be careful on words here because they'll parse them and get around things. We're talking about a paper ballot. The paper ballot needs to be the legal record of the vote, and it needs to be something that we verify at the polling place, not something we get a little slip of paper with a secret code and go check the internet. But yeah, they're heading in the right direction. We just need to fine-tune that and get it so that it really does protect us and that we use the paper ballot in order to audit the machines.
Have you talked to Rush Holt recently, Bev? Do you know how his attempted legislation is moving through the House?
Well, we need to get some Republicans on board. And by the way, we have Republicans on board with the black box activists, so I don't see why we can't get some of the Republican congressmen aboard with Rush Holt's bill. That's really a high priority at this point. If
but
they don't
Tom
come
DeLay,
aboard,
presumably.
We need to get them out of office and find somebody who will understand what the voter wants.
Yeah, amen. So call your local representatives, call your Congress worms, call your senators, call your Secretary of State, and have the conversation like I had with ours here in Vermont, and pass the information along. Armin in Florida has called 1-800-TALK. Yes, Armin has a question for Bev Harris. Armin, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I think the powers that be, it's obvious the reason why they want to go to these electronic machines is because I personally feel that they're losing confidence in their ability to sway the voters
to fool
on misinformation
all the people
and disinformation.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, I said to fool. Pardon me for talking over you. I said to fool all of the people all of the time. You know, it's like George
right.
Bush making that joke where he said, you know, you can fool some of the people all of the time, and those are the ones we need to concentrate on. But I think he's decided that there's not enough of those people.
Well, you know, it's a good debate, and I agree with you. I also think that this paper trail, if the people that are in charge of these electric voting machines, first off, I disapprove of them. I think it should be a paper ballot and a paper receipt both, because it's really hard to fix that. You've seen that in Florida when they tried to.
Yeah.
How they had to take
Armin.
It out with the media so far and so long and get into dangling chads and then all the other stuff and then deny
well,
people.
Well, that was really a side issue. I mean, you know, and we can't go down that road right now, but a good point. Anyway, thank you, and I appreciate the call, Armin. This is Tom Hartman. We're talking with Bev Harris. Bev, can you stick around for one more break?
You bet.
Okay, because I got Jeff in Denver here. He's got a quick question for you we'll take right after this break. This is the Tom Hartman radio program on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Why do I have to get this cold sore scab now? I've got a job interview this week.
The embarrassment of a cold sore scab is as painful as the sore itself. Do something about it. Try new Camphophonique cold sore treatment for scab relief. It's the only one that targets the scab with a special formula that provides maximum strength pain relief. Plus, it seals in moisture to help prevent cracking, to promote healing. Camphophonique stops pain, promotes healing, ends embarrassment.
There are over 200 laxatives on the market today, and the one doctors recommend most is Colace Stool Softener Laxatives. That's because over the years, doctors have learned stimulant-free Colace capsules provide comfortable relief their patients can rely on. If you suffer from occasional bouts of constipation, try Colace capsules. If you do, we're sure we'll receive another important endorsement. Yours. For more information on the number one stool softener brand recommended by doctors, go to ColaceCapsules.com.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
Show.
Joining us now is Jason Campbell with the Christian Action Network.
Well, since 1991, the gay movement has gone down to Disney to do these gay days. You've had events where you've had Mickey Mouse with Goofy in sexual positions.
Ah! Homosexual movies are shown on the Disney transportation systems. And what kind of movies, for God's sake, do they show on these buses?
Triple X.
Oh, you're kidding.
If a child's riding beside one of the buses and looks up and says, Daddy, what is that on the television monitor?
Right.
It's going to be an embarrassing moment.
Oh, it'll be worse than embarrassing. The child will be scarred for life.
Right. That's what the homosexuals want.
Well, I know. They're after the kid. Now, the only thing I'm afraid of is somebody just tuned in the program and never heard the program before and just went, oh, Jesus, this guy is really a right-wing freak.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens are listening to the Mike Malloy Show at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Surely you can find a more patriotic and productive use of your evening hours. For example, organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly hiding dangerous weapons of mass destruction in your victory gardens. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
At Animal Talk, we think deep thoughts. We think about things that most people don't think about, such as, do dogfish chase catfish? Do jellyfish taste good with peanut butter? These are things that bother us. Why is it that Donald Duck doesn't wear any pants, but when he comes out of the shower, he wraps a towel around his waist?
Dude, you need a hobby.
Oh.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Exposing the con conservative. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program. This is Tom Hartman, the IE America Radio Network, and we're talking with Bev Harris, the author of the book Black Box Voting, whose website is blackboxvoting.com. And Jeff in Denver has a question for Bev. Jeff, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi. From the point of view of a professional programmer and someone who's studying this voting issue for a long time, I must second this thing that it need not be complicated.
Can you talk a little louder, Jeff?
Sure. I'm saying this: the software need not be complicated. This stuff could be programmed so simply, I could program myself in a few weeks, and it need not cost much either. We do need to go to this open source stuff. I'm often amazed at how complicated software is that people have. And complication also just means more mistakes, too.
Yeah, more opportunities to melt down. Thank you, Jeff, for sharing that. Bev, it seems that there is a revolt going on the inside with the voting machine companies as well as the outside. Are you seeing this? Programmers standing up and saying, hey, wait a minute?
Well, we're sure getting a lot more coming to us and saying, you know, that they've had concerns. And actually, one of the things I'm also seeing as I started looking through the memos from Diebold is they've had a lot of attrition of people who have left and who have expressed concerns and just didn't feel like their concerns were necessarily being met.
Yeah. But it's not just Diebold. I mean, there's several.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, the thing is, you have to ask why all the resistance to just doing the simple thing of having an auditable system. I mean, we're really not talking about anything. We're not talking about throwing away the machines. We're just talking about making sure that they're trustworthy. Why the resistance? And that, I think, is more suspicious than pretty much anything else I've seen, is these millions of dollars they're spending to try to sell the public on avoiding a paper ballot. That just doesn't make sense.
Don't you think, Bev, that they're just, you know, they're just trying to, they don't want to go to open source software because then it won't be proprietary. Everybody's product will be the same and they won't have competitive edges and advantages and you know.
Well, right. You know, the idea that we're supposed to make a buck out of our people's vote is rather unpatriotic, I think. I mean, this is our vote. It is not important whether someone makes a profit on it or not, frankly, at all.
It is plain old flat-out nuts. Bev Harris, thank you very much. www.blackboxvoting.com.
Thank you so much.
Go there. Check it out. You're welcome. Thanks for being on the program today, Bev. Thank you all for listening. Our program today produced by Joe McPherson in Atlanta and here by Louise Hartman here in Vermont and engineered by Shar Jones in Detroit. Join us tomorrow, same time, same place. Thanks for being with us today. See you tomorrow.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush with a helpful hint to resist the wicked and shameful addiction that causes some of our otherwise mentally healthy citizens to tune into the Mike Malloy Show weeknights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I suggest that you recovering Malloy listeners spend these 3 hours simply standing in your yards, saluting the flags on your houses, apartments, or trailers, or whatever you little people live in. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
You've got your green alligators and long-necked geese, humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, don't you forget that unicorn.
Sunday nights, please, please listen to our show, because if you don't, Mark will not stop singing. Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE.